Prior to starting, I will turn the meeting over to the interpreter.
Hola a todos, bienvenidos. Tenemos interpretación en español disponible. Para seleccionar su idioma, si está usando un dispositivo móvil, por favor toque su pantalla, seleccione los tres puntos, seleccione idioma de interpretación, seleccione español, seleccione silenciar el audio original y para finalizar su opción, por favor seleccione finalizado. Si está utilizando una computadora, verá un globo ubicado en la parte inferior de su pantalla. Por favor haga clic en el globo, seleccione español, y luego seleccione silenciar el audio original y listo. Gracias. Thank you. Back to you.
Thank you. Welcome to the October 10th, 2023 meeting of the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board. For everyone joining us in the meeting room, please turn off or silence your cell phones. This meeting is being webcasted and recorded, so please speak clearly. This meeting is being conducted in a physical location and is also available via remote access. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. For those in the Zoom meeting, you will be muted with your camera off until it is your turn to speak. The host will then unmute you and ask you to turn on your camera if you have one. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute and your camera turned off. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item and then may choose to exit the meeting or continue. Item 1A, Pledge of Allegiance. Jane, would you lead us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item 1B, roll call. Before we continue, I would like to ask the clerk to do a roll call.
Chair Music?
Present.
Vice Chair Satin?
Present.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Good morning, present.
Board Member Powell?
Present.
Board Member Wright?
Here.
Board Member Perez?
Present.
Chair Music, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Item 1C. The purpose of this public meeting is for regional board members to obtain testimony and information from concerned and affected parties within the Colorado River Basin region regarding water quality issues. Item 2 is public forum. We welcome hearing from the public at this meeting. Any person wishing to speak should have submitted a speaker request as described in the agenda instructions. For those items listed on today's agenda, you will make your comments at the time the item is being considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, you may speak now during the public forum. Comments will generally be limited to 3 minutes. The board clerk can now identify the speakers who have submitted speaker cards for the public forum.
Okay, first we have Debbie Salas Rico. Debbie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you can proceed.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Music, board members, and the public. My name is Debbie Salas. I am from Nyland. And on September 1st, 2023, we experienced a flood of a canal overflow. There was much silt and feces throughout our community that was just flowing down the roads. It was like a big river, a raging river with all these items and feces and refrigerators floating down the street. And the silt did come from the East Highland and possibly other canals maintained by the IID. On the third day, I handed out masks to my community because of the smell and the odor that was coming from the mud that entered some of these houses at least a foot. They were inundated with mud and silt. In fact, some of our people still have some of it in their yards. We wanted to know if we could get some kind of help to pick up all these mud piles that some of the people, some of my community have put it in front of their houses. And there was, I'm hoping that Region 7 can enforce the waste discharge requirements for the Imperial Valley drains and implement the TMDL for Imperial Valley drains for sedimentation, silt to protect the health of my community. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Marta Mata.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Marta.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Okay. Hi, my name is Marta Mata. I live here in Island. I have lived here in Island for the last 50 years. And I just want to mention that on September the 1st, we had a flood. And it was like a raging river. And all that water and silt went into my yard, underneath my house. But the one thing that I noticed, that there was a lot of feces coming in, like a sludgy, and it was kind of hard to walk. It was really, really slippery. My dogs were running in and out of the house with all that feces in their feet. Yeah, very bad smell. I still have the silt in my yard, and it's like you could tell that it, whenever there's a little wind or even a small wind, it starts disintegrating and it starts creating like clouds of, I guess, the silt coming apart. I'm very concerned about the after effects of the silt. I have a daughter that's immunosuppressant, and I don't know what's going to happen to her lungs once she breathes it. She sits outside with her dogs, and it's just there. And I was wondering if there was going to be anybody coming out to help us remove it. How do we remove it without creating a big problem? Yeah, that's my main concern, is my daughter's health. And also the communities. We've been having to wear masks, because when we go outside, it's so bad and smelly. Yes. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Arturo Guevara, and he will be speaking via an interpreter.
Okay, I'm passing it to him.
Thank you.
Hello. Buenos dias.
Good morning.
Buenos días. Mi nombre es Arturo Guevara. Soy residente en Island por 40 años. El día primero de septiembre hubo un desastre en nuestra comunidad. En realidad, el agua que vino a descargarse dentro de nuestra comunidad viene del lado este, donde está ubicada este pueblo, pero viene del área del desierto, donde muchas personas viven al aire libre. Son personas que no son aseadas, viven en una situación bastante mal, donde crean mucha basura, no tienen servicios sanitarios. El día del agua, toda esa basura, como está en el lado alto, más alto que nuestro pueblo, trajo toda esa basura de esas personas y viene con mucho excremento, tanto de animal como humano. Todo ese lodo vino alrededor de nuestras propiedades. Hay casas que fueron inundadas dentro de sus casas, perdiendo todas sus pertenencias. Quedaron, pues tuvieron que irse a vivir fuera, a los hoteles donde se les dio ayuda, porque no podían regresar. La electricidad se fue por 24 horas. Las personas perdieron todo alimento que tenían en sus refrigeradores. Entonces, amanecemos con el problema de que el lodo estaba todo alrededor, donde había una peste horrible, donde no había una persona que nos diera un consejo cómo prevenir una enfermedad, porque sabemos que esa contaminación trae suficiente bacteria donde podemos, porque se trata de excremento, quiere decir que puede haber E. coli y personas como tanto niños, personas adultas, en muchos casos hay personas de la tercera edad que aún todavía sus propiedades no han sido limpiadas alrededor. Las únicas personas que no han podido limpiar acumulan su tierra en las esquinas donde ellos viven fuera de su propiedad. Ese lodo que se secó, cuando hace viento, levanta el polvo, toda esa bacteria anda en el viento. No tenemos, digamos, vamos a decir que alguien venga y diga, les voy a dar ayuda para que ocupen un equipo de seguridad para que ustedes no vayan a respirar toda la bacteria que anda en el viento. Pues ahorita en realidad están las calles todavía con bastante polvo y eso es nocivo para cualquier persona. Tienen enfermedades de asma o enfermedades crónicas pulmonares. Y ahorita lo que nosotros queremos es quién pueda venir a ayudarnos y poder mirar algo por esta comunidad que en realidad fuimos afectados muy mal. Y un problema muy grande es que todos los desagües, se puede decir que van las vías del tren, como ellas tienen un nivel alto, ellas tienen unas pipas que van descargando el agua para que ellos no sean afectadas. Pero esas pipas, en vez de haberlas puesto a que hagan un descargo hacia el desierto, las hicieron dentro de la ciudad. Ese descargo de aguas va y nos afecta directamente a nuestras casas. No entiendo por qué nunca hubo un cambio de cómo poder encontrar un desagüe especial en caso de inundaciones. Es todo por el momento. Gracias.
Excuse me, interpreter, are you there?
Did they get all that?
We didn't hear you at all.
No, they oyeron. What do we need to do so they can hear him?
We heard him, but we did not hear you interpreting.
Okay, I'm not the interpreter. I'm here with my three board members. This is Debbie Salas. That was Arturo Guevara.
Right. Oh, no, I was speaking to the interpreter.
Okay. Okay.
Sorry.
No,
we heard him. Okay, we heard him. Yes, thank you.
Okay. So are we free to go, dear, or should we stay on? Necesito oyeron, pero en español. Necesitan el translator, necesito hacerlo translate a ellos, al board.
So there's no translator?
What translator is it? The translator no hizo translate que dijiste. Pero sí lo tienen en recording.
Grabado.
I believe you were supposed to interpret into the room, so from Spanish to English. I'm not sure what to tell you. No, we did not hear you interpreting.
Tú hablas como Ayer también dijiste muy bien.
Okay, we heard him in Spanish. We did not hear the interpretation into English.
It's the room audio on English, on the English interpretation. I think that would solve it if the room audio is logged in on the English. Because then you would hear
yes.
What... Because on Zoom, we can all hear the interpretation on the English channel. But if you're on the original audio, then you can't hear any interpretation. So I just wonder if the room is not logged into the interpretation.
Hang on. We're logged into English. The room monitor. Check this one.
We'll figure it out.
Okay, I think we got it. Try again. Yes. Okay, can you translate back into English what he said?
I'm not trying to ask what he said.
Ma'am, we're going to have the speaker give his remarks again, and this time the remarks in full will be translated, please.
You would like
and
Mr.
also
Guevara to speak
please
again?
Tell the gentleman that he needs to stop every sentence or so and allow you time to interpret, so that way you have allow him to restart and just take it slow.
Hello. Sí. Pero I don't hear. I can't hear. Hello.
Arturo Guevara, can you please repeat what you stated earlier, please?
Okay, mi nombre es Arturo Guevara. Soy residente de Nyland por 40 años. Voy a hablar acerca del desastre que tuvimos el 1 de septiembre de este año. Hubo una tormenta al lado oeste de nuestra comunidad.
We're not hearing the interpreter again.
Usted me dice cuando empiece.
I can't hear the interpreter on Zoom either.
Yes.
Yes. That is fine.
Can he continue? Board, can Mr. Guevara continue?
When you're talking and you talked to the board just then, you were talking on the Spanish channel.
Okay, I'm going to put him back on. There you go.
Buenos días. Okay, tocante al desastre de Nylan. Voy a ser breve. Fuimos afectados por agua que traía basura, traía excremento, tanto de animal como de personas. Toda esa acumulación de bacteria se encuentra alrededor de nuestras propiedades. Muchas de ellas entró dentro de las casas. Personas que tuvieron que perder todo y moverse porque sus casas fueron condenadas por el condado en el área que vivimos. Personas de tercera edad, enfermas, aún tienen sus propiedades contaminadas en el área donde viven y tienen un olor desagradable. El problema es que en lo que estamos enfrentando ahorita, las personas que limpian avientan los desechos hacia la calle. Pilas de tierra que están secas, cuando hace viento, toda esa bacteria se encuentra en el aire. Necesitamos que alguien nos dé una orientación. ¿Qué tipo podemos usar para nuestra protección pulmonar? Si hay alguna enfermedad, niños que van a la escuela, caminan por las calles donde hay mucho polvo, polvo que se levanta cuando pasan los carros. Una de las cosas que también enfrentamos por 24 horas, no había electricidad. Las personas perdieron todo su alimento porque nos encontrábamos en ese momento en la temporada de calor, donde aquí es bastante alta. Entonces, buscamos quién podrá darnos una ayuda para resolver problemas. Y un problema desagradable que tenemos es que hay pipas que descargan agua, pero en vez de aventarlas hacia el desierto o campos abiertos donde no viva nadie, están directamente en dirección dentro de nuestra comunidad. Son pipas muy viejas que fueron puestas por años. En una de ellas alcancé a ver que decía en 1910 fueron instaladas esos desagües. Más de 100 años y nunca ha habido un cambio para protección de nuestra comunidad. Lo que yo digo, que si en alguna otra desastre parecido al que estuvimos el 1 de septiembre, no sé qué va a pasar con esta comunidad. Está en desastre. Es todo por el momento. Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Okay, the next person would be Andra Dakota. Andra, are you there?
Hello? Hello, I have been here all along. Hello.
Okay, we can hear you.
Oh, that took a long time. All right. Well, thanks for waiting for that. My name is Antwa Dakota. I am both a resident of Nyland, where I own a home on Main Street, and of Slab City, where I maintain a residence for my dog rescue that I run. As you know, our commentary is about the flood that occurred here on September 1st. My main interest is to learn, or to encourage you, please, to work with the IID to prevent such further tragedies. From my observation on location here, a lot of what happened might have been due to the canals not having been opened. I don't know the proper terminology, but what we call the floodgates were not open, because the canals were already full to the brim at the time the rains poured down. That is going to happen again. We are going to get flash floods. This region is historically known for this. So I would like to know and to find out what the IID could be told to do their due diligence in the waste management part, and cauldrons, and the leading the water away. I don't want to repeat what my pal said about the feces and the mud. I witnessed a car in my driveway become waterborne, meaning starting to float. That requires at least 2 feet of water. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, because I hear all kinds of sounds coming from you. I don't know what that means. Another thing I want to bring to your attention, in the aftermath of that flood, there were at least 8 residents that live on the very much east part of toward the Chocolate Mountains of the Nyland region that were cut off for 2 weeks, meaning the roads that were destroyed by the flood around Siphon 7 were not fixed in 2 weeks. So we had to hand carry water by the gallon to those people. 2 of them are elderly and disabled, meaning they had no way of going and walking out. I mean, the tragedies that I have witnessed here are severe. Just because you haven't seen that in the mainstream news doesn't mean it didn't happen. It was not in the mainstream news because no news were here, and also could not get here because the 111 was even flooded. So we are very interested in having you guys use your authority to work with the IID to prevent things like this from happening again. I understand that the cauldrons that should have helped lead the water away were completely clogged up. We have, not me, but people that submitted to you have videos, photos of this, which is why all this water ran into Nyland, or at least partially that's why. So somebody did not do the maintenance of this waste management procedure that is set up, that needs to be controlled. There needs to be an entity, maybe from you guys, to go to the IID and make them do what they are supposed to do. That's pretty much all I have to say. The rest, my pals already mentioned to you about the feces, the health problems. I mean, several of us, including myself, we have respiratory problems since the flood. I don't know why or what. It's not really allergy season. So it's something that came with the flood, the stink of the, frankly, feces. Let's call it what it is. Just imagine there's poop all over your yard, right? In plain English. So that's what we're living with here. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. Yeah. Waiting for the... Okay, we're going to take a timeout, technical break, so that we can coordinate the speaker with the interpreter. Thank you for your patience. We're going to resume with public comments.
Okay. Our next speaker is Victoria Russell.
Yes, ma'am. Hello, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Can you also see me? Can you also see me?
No, we can't.
Okay. I am actually standing outside my home right now. My name is Victoria Russell. I'm a resident of Slab City. I live directly on the East Highline Canal. From my experience, the flood that happened on September 1st of this year could have been completely prevented. The morning of September 1st, the canal was completely full of water. That is a indication that we wouldn't be getting very much rain as we have had in the past. We flooded out pretty badly. We had significant amount of silt and pollution that ended up backing up into our homes. When the canal broke, we could see it release all of the water into Nyland. The canal broke within an hour of the rain actually starting here on the front canal, on the East Highline Canal. Across from my home, I actually watched it break. We did send in pictures and video. It created the silt and sand filled the canal to the brim with silt and sand. The entire canal was full of dirt from it backing up. And in subsequent days after the flood, when they began maintaining the canal to open it back up and to allow water to flow again, they started digging out that silt and sludge. And that silt and sludge is piled 15 feet high in some places right up against my home right now, and in our yards and in our driveways. And it is creating a disaster plan for the future as well, for how they have the breaks created. In these piles, there are rotting fish, there's garbage, there's all different kinds of pollution. As it dries, it's spreading into the air and causing all of us to have breathing problems. I'm sure you can hear me. My voice is raspy because of my asthma keeps acting up. The amount of damage that was caused from the flood caused all of our entire community to be locked off from the town of Nyland, from our town of Nyland, for several days, where we couldn't pass through. And those of us who live on the front canal, we were actually locked off for much longer than that because of the maintenance that they were doing on the canal at that time was causing such a significant nuisance that we had to walk, some of us, more than a half a mile to just get drinking water. We had to walk through that mud, and we continue to have to walk through that mud and sludge and silt every day, as they still haven't cleaned it up. And it's creating a serious environmental impact to our homes. It's damaged property. The mud is either too acidic or too alkaline. It is more or less like, if any fabric touches it, like a lot of our clothing and stuff that, you know, ended up getting washed away, we were pulling it out of the mud and it was ripping to shreds. It was melting the fabric. So I know that that's not good for us. We want to know when the piles of mud will be removed. We want to know what the future plan is for the maintenance of the canal, since our canals have not been maintained properly. Since I've been here, in the 6 years that I've been here, I've seen them shave the sides of the canal vegetation at least once a year. But I live next to locks. I live next to siphons. I have not seen them come out clean anything. I have not seen them actually come out and maintenance those things. I do, however, see them drive up and down my road every day. I do speak to them. I ask them what's going on. I ask them, hey, you guys need some help pulling stuff out of the drains? You know, and sometimes they let us help them. But as it stands now, we are fearing for our future with these piles of dirt. It's creating a significant flood risk for the future again as well. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Victoria. We do have the pictures that you submitted, and we will show those now.
Yes, ma'am. Do you want me to narrate the photos?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Okay.
Give us a second. There you go. To get those up.
Okay. So that photo is the after they started digging out the water in the canal. That's a dead fish that was just laying in the canal, and there were several. That's part of the stuff that they dug out and is sitting in front of my front yard right now. There's dead vegetation, there's dead fish, there's just all sorts of pollution. That is one of the shorter piles of dirt that we have in front of our homes, and that may look like a singular pile. However, that lines the entire road of the front canal, the front East Highline Canal, where we all live. That again is another mountain. You can see that's my car right there. And you can see how high it is in comparison to the car. I wanted to mention that stove that you see in the bottom right-hand corner was actually sitting on my front porch. When it pulled it, when the flood came, it actually drug it all the way out into that area, which is probably about 10 feet from the actual canal, where it pulled water up and kept it. It destroyed my stove. What you see here is that if you look at the reflections there, that first reflection in front of you is actually the road. On the other side, on the next reflection is the canal, and then the tree that you see there on the right top corner, that is where the canal broke in front of my home. That is directly across from my home, and that's where it broke right there. This particular picture was taken as it was starting to break, because it broke into our road first before it broke into the Nyland side. So it broke and started coming into our homes before it started going into the Nyland area. This is actually my yard. This is the destruction that was caused in my yard. We had about two and a half feet of water flowing through there. And then the outlet, that's the area that shoots into the tree, like it's directly in front of where that tree is that I showed you where it broke. And it ended up sweeping everything that was in my yard up against one of my trailers that I have in the front, which kept that stuff from going, you know, into the canal or what. But it was like floating there. Like, it wasn't like rushing at some points. It was just like sitting there, which was weird because it should have been flowing. If the canals had been maintained properly, the canals would have been flowing. If the locks had been opened, the canals would have been flowing. It wouldn't have been going horizontal. It would have been going vertically. This picture right here is, this is how deep the water had gotten, I do believe. I can barely see it because I'm having to stand outside. Yes, I do believe that's a picture of the water flowing and the vegetation that they ended up digging out of the canal and putting on in front of our yards and in our yards. This right here is actually a picture of my yard as well. And that is the water flowing straight through. And more or less right there, it's not the canal. My land where I sit is much higher than the canal. So for the water to be completely level with the canal with my yard, that again leads to the knowledge that the canals were not flowing. It was sitting there. The canals were flowing directly into Nyland instead of going down the East Highline path.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, our next speaker is Kenneth Ingraham. Kenneth, are you there? Kenneth Ingraham? Okay, we're moving on to Zach Henderson. Zach Henderson. Okay. Shannon Barlow. Shannon Barlow. Dorothy Jari. Dorothy? Jen Nelson.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Fantastic. My name is Jen Nelson. I am the president of the board of directors for the Chasters Foundation. We're a 501c3 that operates East Jesus, a museum and artist residency program in the Nyland area. Our property that we own is immediately adjacent to Drop 8 of the All-American Canal. During Hurricane Hillary, we received 4 days of rain. Our land was very saturated, and we flash flooded twice. On September 1st, we received a couple minutes of rain and then an extraordinary flash flood. And then we lost approximately 1 acre of our land, 10,000 cubic yards of material, approximately 4,000 pickup truck bed loads in under 45 minutes. In a massive flash flood and a wave of erosion. I do have images to show this. I'm not sure, I don't think I got them out to you, but I will send them for review. So we lost an extraordinary amount of our land. We lost structures, we lost equipment, we lost infrastructure. The water was 14 foot deep and absolutely rushing through our property. It cut a massive erosion scar. A few days later, some folks wearing orange vests with an excavator and a work truck began pumping water into the erosion scar on our property. We walked out and spoke to them and asked them to stop as we were already losing chunks of land again. They told us they were doing necessary maintenance and would not stop. Eventually, we were able to get a hold of our county representatives who were able to put a stop to the pumping. But we had additional damage that was created by the maintenance crews of the All-American Canal on our property. I am deeply concerned, given the amount of silt that came off from the erosion scar on our property. I'm deeply concerned that unless something is done to stabilize this massive erosion scar, I'm worried it's going to do this every time it rains. I'm worried we're going to lose our infrastructure and our entire museum. I'm worried we're going to lose our property. And there is absolute disregard for the damage that's being caused. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to try a couple of the folks I called before because it looks like they may have been able to get on now. Dorothy Jari. Shannon Barlow. Okay. That would be all I have, Chair.
Thank you. We are now moving to agenda item 3, which is the review and approval of the minutes of the board's meeting on August 10th.
Yes, I'm sorry. I have a couple more.
Okay.
In person. Okay, Alex Sanchez and Peter Nelson. Sorry about that.
Morning.
Morning. Morning, Chair Mozick and board members. My name is Alex Sanchez. I'm here representing Coachella Valley Irregular Lands Coalition. I'm the chair, along with Peter Nelson, one of our board members. And just, I'm reading a letter on response from a question from you guys on your meeting on September 10th. At your September 10th board meeting, you asked the Coachella Valley Irrigated Lands Coalition provide the Coral River Basin Regional Water Board with a list of parcels and landowners that are potentially required to be in the irrigated lands program and are not associated with the active membership. I've consulted with the board of directors and response is outlined below. The order requires civil to annually submit a list of current members to a regional water board, and those who dropped in the CVOC membership, and those that we know have failed to comply with the terms of orders and matters that are administered by coalition. This information is then used by the State Water Board to assess how many acreage is enrolled in the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program. Additionally, we continue to find such requests beyond the scope of our mission as defined by our corporate funding documents and IRS provision of our nonprofit status. We do not have enforcement powers, and there are several issues involved. Membership is in our coalition is legally voluntary. Growers subject to the Puerto Colonial Act and State Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program may join our coalition to assist them to comply with regional board orders. They maintain and obtain discharge permits from the board. They may exempt under terms of general order, or they may form a new coalition, or they may decide for whatever reason not to comply. Our membership is open to anyone who chooses to join. As provided in the order, it's the Regional Water Board's power and responsibility to enforce the order. The following is an excerpt from the order. Enforcement. The Colorado River Basin Water Board reserves the right to take enforcement action authorized by law. Accordingly, failure to timely comply with the provision of the order may subject discharges to enforcement action. CVOC has no legal power to determine whether any particular property is subject to the general order or if it meets exception outlined in the order. Unlike operations that fall under the provision of business and professional code and its regulation, there's no legal mandate to obtain a license to farm. Even such resources and pesticide permits do not identify who must belong to coalition or obtain an additional permit to compliance with RLP regulations. It has been suggested to use irrigation delivery records to determine which parcels have irrigation applied for crops. Over 10 years ago, we were advised by attorney for the Coachella Valley Water District that we would not release irrigation records to CVOC. That advice was presented at the open regional board meeting with a lawyer from the Attorney General's office present, who did not dispute the district position regarding the release of records. We must assume this continues to be the position of the district. We do not have legal standings to bring a writ mandate to obtain the information. We believe we would be in the same position if we were accounting information for an Imperial Irrigation District. The coalition maintains a membership database to provide the required participants information in regional water board annually. CVOC also conducts outreach education to its members. Do I have permission to continue? Okay.
Keep going.
Thank you. Through members mailing, commented groups, resource districts, farm bureaus to educate growers, RRP requirements, and what land required to enroll in the RRP. It is grower responsibility to understand the regulations and enroll these parcels in the coalition. It's not the CVOC responsibility to police or verify information submitted to us. Our membership already carries the burden of paying general water testing, assessments, processing plan developments, reporting to the board, and providing annual education to growers. The public good is the basis of protecting our watershed. Although we feel the principal equity and realities of economic scales require that discharges should bear the weight of their own operations, and the regional board should step up to state responsibility and enforcement, respectively. Thank you. I got another letter that we might want to read.
Do we want to take one of those letters one at a time, or do you want to hear them both? I think you should probably hear them both, and then we'll have questions.
What are you doing? All right. Next letter. The Coachella Valley Irrigated Lands Coalition Board of Directors respectfully requesting a one-year extension of our fish sampling requirements, delaying the activity until October 2024, and the other appropriate aid for Colorado River Basin Board as described below. Due to the lengthy process to obtain permits from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to take fish into Lincoln Street Drain, CVOC board needs to set dues members for 2023-2024 before we had final take permit and the requirements. In the Regional Board LRP Order, Attachment A, Section 5, economic analysis collection and lab fees was estimated at $10,243 per year. After permit was finally approved by CDFW, we obtained from our consulting firm, MLJ Environmental, actual costs of necessary QAPP amendments, informing fish tissue sampling, analysis, and reporting. This total more doubled the original cost in the order. As a result, significant cost increase are anticipated dues to be collected when 2023-24 budget and grower acreage fee was set in June, and inadequate to cover our additional expense. Another factor, the Steelbook Board was forced to increase annual fees from 2023-24 to $8 per acre, going up from $5 originally, to cover additional administrative costs for implementing irrigation and nitrogen management plan as required in the new order. The dues increase appears not to be a significant barrier from some growers to renew Steelbook membership. As of September 15, 2023, membership renewals 23-24 fiscal year were down to 37 members representing 11,842 acres. In the order, Regional Board estimated increased membership under full compliance to be 190 growers or 65,000 irrigated lands. Additional State Water Board September set an acreage fee of $1.42 per acre, increased from $1.34 per acre assessed in 2022. Since the order was issued, all costs to implement the order has increased, as stated Attachment A in Section 3 Economic Consideration. Under Water Code Section 13263 and 1341, economic consideration is one of the factors the Regional Board must take into account to issue water discharge requirements. Our members in the past have been proven to support Steelbook and are taking board seriously and are trying to comply with requirements. With the help from Farm Bureau, Western Growers, and other agriculture groups, the Water District, we have endeavored to reach out to the agriculture community to encourage compliance through Steelbook. But obviously, Steelbook has assistance, needs assistance from Regional Board and the program to succeed in two important ways. First, increasing public awareness through State Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program through its enforcement powers to increase compliance, therefore revenues. If Steelbook increases dues to our current members, it would inevitably lead to loss of yet more members. Two, through extension of fish tissue sampling, enabling Steelbook to realistically reduce for the cost of aspect of the order. Thank you for consideration.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a couple questions, or I'll
sure, I just have one ahead. Question. How long did it take to get the permit? And from the time you applied and gave them all the information till
Peter, do you think it was a year? Yeah.
No, I mean, once you submitted everything they need, what is their approval part time?
I'm not sure what the 2 years?
2 years. Thanks.
So just a point of clarification, the board did not meet on September 10th. That board meeting was canceled. I think you're referring to the August board meeting.
Probably, yes.
Who was it that, do you have any recollection as to who suggested the irrigation delivery records? Do you know who, you say it has been suggested. Who suggested that?
Not sure who suggested. I know you guys asked for a list of non-compliance members, and we were going to go back to the board, and that's what we're...
So just to sharpen what was said in that, I think it was that first letter, essentially what you're saying is that, you know, the board, the order requires you to keep a current roster of membership, so you have a list of names. And at the last board meeting that we held in August, we said we would like, you know, you asked us to help you basically compel more people to join your coalition. Or at least compelled to seek regulatory coverage due to regulatory drop-off. People are unenrolling. You have a shorter list of names than this time this year than you did last year.
Correct.
And you also said that there was a 25% drop in acreage of enrollment. I think it was something right along that ballpark. So you have an idea of the acres. And you also stated that your coalition has the information as to the specific parcels associated with those names that have dropped off.
Correct.
And in this letter, you are saying that it is not the mission of the coalition to provide that information to the board. And so you will not be providing the parcel numbers and the locations associated with each of those names that dropped off. That's what your letter is saying.
Right. So we actually, Steelbook actually submits a list of current members every year. But we can't, what we're asking, we can't be the enforcers.
The board did not ask enforcement. What the board simply asked the coalition would it be willing to provide the parcel numbers associated with the names that are no longer members of the coalition? And your letter is saying the coalition will not be providing those parcel numbers voluntarily.
Thank you. My name is Peter Nelson. I'm a board member with the Coachella Valley Irrigated Lands Coalition. We've looked at the issues, what we're required to do. As a coalition, we're required to give you the names and parcel numbers and information regarding our membership. We've done that for this year. We've done it the prior year and the year before that. What we're seeing is a decline in membership and a decline in dues. We've had to increase our dues more so than other irrigated lands coalitions across the valley. We did across the state. We did a survey, and we're one of the higher charging irrigated lands coalitions. But as far as memberships goes, our requirements are to give you our membership. And so if you would like to go back and look at prior memberships from prior reports, you have the information. There's no reason for us to provide a list of parcels that now have dropped out because you have that already.
We do. I thought our order only requires us that name, the names to be disclosed.
I may be misspeaking in terms of the parcels, but you have the names, and so the names, you can see who's dropped off the list. You can look at county records and find out. So
the coalition is once again directing us to use independent public records to do investigations to figure out where those properties are associated with the names, instead of providing it to us. And
we're not telling you to do anything. We're saying we're providing the information required by the order in order to show our membership. There are other lands out there that may or may not be required to report under the program that we have no idea. They're not coming to be members of ours, and we're doing significant outreach with our trade organizations, with our local officials. We're doing outreach to get people to recognize that there's a requirement that you put on to us through the order, and we're giving you the names of those people who have elected to do that. We've given you names from prior years, which you can feel more than free to go back to those reports and contact those individuals to see if they are still in the farming business and still required to report. That would be quote unquote step towards enforcement, and it's possible that those actions could push more people into our membership. But at this time, we're down to 11,000 acres of the 60,000 potential acreage. We're down to 37 members of potential 190 members. We've done what is required of us, and we're leaving it with you. And we're saying that we would like, if we're going to succeed as the Irrigated Lands Coalition, we're suggesting that you possibly look at enforcement actions on the people that have dropped out or the parcels that have not. And that's under your purview, not the Irrigated Lands Coalition's purview, in our estimation.
My follow-up questions are regarding the second letter. So your request, the board already gave you one extension of a year at least, right, for this fish tissue monitoring requirement?
Yeah, the extension was given due to the fact that the Fish and Wildlife would not authorize a permit. And so under that, the extension was given because we didn't have a permit. So that was the first year.
But you ultimately obtained one.
The second year, the permit came through after the release of our 2023-2024 dues. And so those members that you see from our list have been paying those dues. And the estimate that was given was about $10,000, rough terms.
By whom?
In the Regional Board's Irrigated Lands RP Order, Attachment A, Section 5, the economic analysis of collection and lab fees was estimated at $10,243.
And
our quote came in from MLB at MLJ Environmental, at double of that.
When did you obtain that quote, and when did you retain MLJ Environmental?
So MLJ's been on board with us for several years now, and the quote came in after the permit was issued. The analysis was done. It was about a month ago. Okay. And so this has all happened very recently.
So did you not seek to get a quote before you obtained the take permit?
We were doing business, trying to get MLG to give us a quote. So the timing of that was with the issuance of the permit.
Okay. And so you assumed that there would be no issuance of a take permit when you set your dues for this cycle?
We had no idea of how we were going to, you can get a permit today, and if it's 4 months from now, the quote's going to be different. So without a valid time frame, it didn't make sense to go out and get a quote.
And so the request that you're making in the second letter, just to focus it, and just to, so I want to be fair, your request is for an indefinite suspension of the fish tissue monitoring requirement until the board obtains the list and independently finds out who is not participating in the coalition and increases dues, and then it might have the money to complete this fish tissue monitoring requirement.
That would be helpful. The actual request is to suspend for 1 year, but your suggestion sounds better to me.
And it says until October 2024 and other appropriate aid, and then you say through an extension to for fish tissue sampling. Basically, as I read it, your request is not just for 1 year.
We have a request for 1 year, and if you're able to supply other aid to the coalition in terms of looking at other lands that may want to join in the coalition, that would be helpful.
Okay. I have no further questions.
I have a question. How long is the Fish and Wildlife permit good for? What's the expiration date on it?
I don't have that.
Yeah.
So I have a question. When you submit your reports to us, are they electronically where we can, like an Excel file, where we can compare one to the other to easily sort it out and see who was in and who wasn't?
Yeah. Chair Music, I'm not the technical guy on that one, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah, we don't.
We
can answer. We can get you an answer.
I would.
We do have a staff person who would be able to answer that question.
Okay.
I would.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Board.
Yeah, go ahead.
Morning.
Turn on the mic. Okay. Yes.
Oh, it was off. Okay. The light looked green. I have the most recent membership list from Seavilk submitted July 1st of this year. There are only 20 members that they claim are not part of their coalition currently. Of those 20 members, only one is did not pay dues or unresponsive. Everyone else is sold, merged, or not irrigating currently. So we can, you know, send a directive to that one person, but that's all we have for our information. So if they want to provide us with more information or further lists, we would welcome them.
Are the members of the coalition still here?
No, they left.
Well, I think that resolves it. Do you know how long the fish tissue sampling or fish tissue take permit is for?
That I don't know. It only took them about a year and a half to get it, though.
The basis for that extension was to obtain that take permit, right?
Yes.
And they knew about that requirement from the beginning?
Yes.
Were there any communications that the board sent out on regarding that? Like, did they came in about a year ago, right?
To ask for the extension, yes. They had submitted all the information to CDFW and were waiting for the permit, so we gave them an extension until this year, and they have received the permit. It was a couple of months ago.
Thank you.
And just members of the board, I just want to be absolutely clear about what the legal requirements are here. In their comments, they mentioned several times over that there were estimates provided in the WDR's general order that was issued for the Coachella Valley coalitions. The Water Code 13267 requires that monitoring and reporting requirements bear a reasonable relationship to the need for the submittal of those reports, which meant that, you know, the best practice in many cases is to try to provide a rough estimate for how much monitoring might actually cost so that the board could actually consider prospectively, you know, what kind of demands it's asking of the regulated community. So that way we can't just, you know, ask for the moon if we don't have a good reason for having it. Those estimates are prospective estimates only. The monitoring requirements are not contingent on the accuracy of those estimates, which means that if it turns out it costs more to do the work than was previously estimated when we were considering issuing that order, that does not affect the discharger's legal obligations to submit those reports. That's the way it unfortunately does work out sometimes. I was not part of the working with the board when we adopted those permits, but they did not obtain that estimate until after, you know, as to like how much it would actually cost to do this work until a month ago, as you heard. So when they say that, oh, it's more than it was supposed to cost, that does not affect their legal obligations under the law.
And so is there any consideration, like if they're down to 20% of the total amount of the land, should they still pay that 20%, 100% of the cost?
That is a policy question. But they have their requirements, and each of the people who are required to seek regulatory coverage under the order must obtain regulatory coverage in one way or another. And I think logic dictates that, you know, the fewer people in a coalition, the harder it becomes for the remaining members, and that, you know, many hands make light work. But that's not necessarily a legal issue.
Okay. Thank you.
Excuse me, Chair Music. We have one more public comment. Lillian Garcia.
Good morning, Chair Music, board members, and the public. My name is Lillian Garcia with United for Justice. On September 1st, 2023, the community of Nyland and Slap City experienced pollution, nuisance, and damage from the silt and excrement. Such came from the overflow of the sewer in Nyland and the East Highland Canal. I'm here today requesting for the TMDL for the Imperial Valley drains for sedimentation and silt to be implemented as soon as possible. Also enforce order R7-2021-0050 and request for the dischargers to correct as soon as possible to protect public health. And I just want to emphasize with you and try to imagine your house being filled with silt and excrement and losing appliances. These communities are disinvested, disadvantaged, and low income, and it is inhumane conditions that they have been exposed to. Thank you for your time.
Any more?
No, that's it.
Okay, we now move on to agenda item 3, which is the review and approval of the minutes of the board's meeting on August 10th, 2023. May I receive a motion?
I so move.
Second.
Any questions? Roll call vote, please.
Chair Music?
Aye.
Vice Chair Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
I'll abstain. I wasn't present. Thank you.
Board Member Powell?
Aye.
Board Member Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. We will now get a State Water Board update from Laurel Firestone, a board member. Good morning, Laurel.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great.
Great to see all of you. Packed board meeting already, and I know there's lots of good things on the agenda. I will try to be quick. We a few things going on at the water board. We just had a workshop on October 4th on our water use efficiency standards. So currently we've started a formal rulemaking for establishing a urban water use efficiency objective. And we had a really robust public hearing. Comment periods open until October 17th. And really the goal here is to try to make conservation a way of life and acknowledge that we are in a hotter and drier climate, and part of the both demand and supply strategies are that the governor outlined in his water supply strategy include trying to reduce urban water use by up to 500,000 acre feet per year. And what we're proposing right now is proposing to save up to 446,000 acre feet, which is enough to supply 1.3 million households per year in 2035. So there's a lot more to come, and I just encourage folks to look. We have a tool where you can look up your water supplier and what the urban water use efficiency standard regulations as proposed, what a current estimate is of what these standards would mean for your water supplier water use. We also held a workshop workshop on September 7th on direct potable reuse regulations, and the written comment period closed September 8th, and we are targeting adoption in December to meet the deadline established by the legislature for final adoption of direct potable reuse regs. We also released the Sacramento San Joaquin Bay Delta Water Quality Control Plan draft staff report on September 28th. And that sets forth, it's an environmental document and examines the in-stream flows and potential impacts of in-stream flows, as well as a voluntary agreement and other proposed changes to the Sacramento Delta component of the San Francisco Bay, San Francisco, or Sacramento San Joaquin Bay Delta Water Quality Control Plan. So we are having many in-person and virtual workshops. The public comment period concludes December 15th. There will be in-person in Sacramento hearings on November 17th and December 1st, each starting at 9:30 a.m. and an evening workshop on December 11th, beginning at 4 p.m. on that. But there are also many in-person and virtual workshops that you can watch live or virtual, just in terms of also to help understand the different components. There's just a lot of documents. And this is really outlining some potential alternatives and potential impacts for changes to the water quality control plan. We adopted our SAFER fund expenditure plan for the next fiscal year. That's $130 million that we have per year to support solutions for water system, failing water systems, at-risk water systems, and domestic wells that prioritizing small, disadvantaged, and low-income communities. and it's annually adopted and informed by the annual statewide drinking water needs assessment. We also adopted guidelines for a new extended arrearages program on October 3rd. That will provide up to $600 million in payments for both water and wastewater customer arrearages for a relief period from March 4th, 2020 through December 31st, 2022. So this is basically a round two of customer debt relief that will be paid to water systems and wastewater systems that apply. It was really successful in addressing COVID-related arrearages or water, wastewater debt. And so this is a round two. We requires water systems and wastewater systems to apply. And so encouraging folks to do that again. We also adopted, it was in the news a bit ago, on a cease and desist order requiring Blue Triton Brands to immediately cease its unauthorized diversions from spraying in the San Bernardino National Forest. And that a cease and desist order on Blue Triton Brands has 30 days to petition for reconsideration. And lastly, we have WQCC, the Water Quality Coordinating Committee meeting, October 23rd and 24th in Sacramento. This is really an opportunity for all the regional and state board members to get together once a year. It is open to the public, but it's a really great chance to connect. If you can come, I really hope that you're able to join us. We have a great agenda. There is a virtual option if you can't attend in person, but part of the, I think, benefits of connection is the in-person if you're able to do it. So I really hope people can join. We're going to be talking about many things, but two of the particular ones that are on the agenda are around the impacts of the Sackett decision and also work on tribal beneficial use designations. Among many other things. And I think with that, that's my current update. I am happy to answer questions. And it's good to see you all.
Thank you. We have no questions at this time and look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to agenda item 5. All items appearing under the uncontested items calendar are acted upon by the board in one motion without discussion. At this time, there is one item on the uncontested calendar, agenda item 5. Item 5 is an unnumbered waste discharge requirements order and the corresponding monitoring and reporting program for Country Life MHRVP Acid Partners LP Wastewater Treatment Plant. At this time, I propose to move to an additional item to the uncontested calendar, specifically item 7, an unnumbered rescission and substitution order. May I receive a motion?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
As a reminder, this is only a procedural vote on whether to add agenda item 7 to the uncontested calendar. If added to the uncontested calendar, this item will then be voted on with the other uncontested items. Roll call vote, please.
Chair Music?
Aye.
Vice Chair Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Powell?
Aye.
Board Member Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Turning now to the consideration of the uncontested calendar, does any board member wish to remove any item from the uncontested calendar? If any member of the public wishes to remove an item from the uncontested calendar, you need to have filled out a speaker card. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards on this item?
No, there is not.
Proceeding now to,
Moose, yes, we need a vote for the uncontested. Roll call, please.
We need a motion.
A motion.
There was no motion pending.
I move that the uncontested calendar, including item 7 that was recently added, be approved.
I'll second.
Roll call vote, please.
Chair Music?
Aye.
Vice Chair Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Powell?
Aye.
Board Member Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
We'll now proceed to the contested agenda item 6. Item 6 is CDO order R7-2023- to be determined for 29 Hospitality Inc., Holiday Inn Express, 29 Palms, Joshua Tree Wastewater Treatment and Disposal System. I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 6, which is an unnumbered cease and desist order for the 29 Hospitality at the Holiday Inn Express, 29 Palms, Joshua Tree Wastewater Treatment and Disposal System. This hearing will be conducted in accordance with the hearing procedure dated August 1st, 2023. As explained in the hearing procedure, board staff have separated functions between an advisory team and a prosecution team. The advisory team consists of Paula Rasmussen, the board's executive officer, and David Lancaster, the board's counsel. The prosecution team consists of the board's assistant officer, Cassandra Owens, board staff, Jose Cortez and Michael Perez, Wendy Wiles, environmental program manager from the Office of Enforcement, and assistant chief counsel, David Boyers from the Office of Enforcement. The discharger is represented by Peter Bakta and Neil Bakta. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
Yes, Chair Music, we have Peter Baca.
Okay, I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the penalty of perjury? If so, say, answer, I do.
I do.
Okay. When you go to speak, please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. The order of speakers for this item are presentation by the prosecution team, comments from the discharger, comments from the public, board member comments and discussion, and then we will close the hearing. We'll begin with the prosecution team.
Yes. Do you have my slides? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is Wendy Wiles. I'm an environmental program manager, retired annuitant with the State Water Board's Office of Enforcement, and I have taken the oath. The Holiday Inn Express in 29 Palms is owned by 29 Hospitality Incorporated. The prosecution team is requesting that you adopt a cease and desist order to compel the discharger to bring the facility back into compliance with its waste discharge requirements. Next slide. In this presentation, I'll provide a map of the Holiday Inn location, and then I'll discuss the waste discharge requirements that regulate the facility, as well as my inspection in May of 2022. I'll also give a summary of the recent violations and the actions taken by the discharger. I'll then describe the tentative cease and desist order, the revisions we're recommending, and then provide the staff recommendation. Next slide. This particular Holiday Inn Express is located along Highway 62, about 1.5 miles west of the town of 29 Palms. The area is not sewered, and homes rely on septic systems to treat their waste. However, this hotel has a package treatment plant because the board has previously identified 29 Palms as an area of concern with respect to nitrate and salt in the groundwater. Therefore, the board requires new commercial and housing developments to install wastewater plants that provide a higher level of treatment than septic tanks do. Next slide. The Holiday Inn Express is regulated by Waste Discharge Requirements, Order Number R7-2009-0010, which is found as Exhibit 1 in your evidence list. For the rest of this presentation, I'll refer to the Waste Discharge Requirements as the permit. So the permit was adopted in 2009, prior to construction of the hotel, and it describes two wastewater systems. Domestic waste flows to an activated sludge treatment plant prior to discharge to seepage pits. The permit refers to this system as the main plant, and I'll also use that term. The second wastewater system is for the laundry waste, and it flows to a septic tank prior to discharge to another set of seepage pits. This permit is similar to many of the other waste discharge requirements that were adopted in the late 2000s for small wastewater plants. In addition to standard prohibitions and specifications, the permit contains flow limits and a pH limit for both the main plant and the laundry waste. There are also effluent limits for the main plant for four constituents: BOD, total suspended solids, total nitrogen, and total dissolved solids. In May of 2022, I inspected the facility. The inspection report is found as Exhibit 10 in your evidence list. The picture on the left is of the main plant, which treats the domestic wastewater. The components are below ground and are protected by the metal box that you see in the slide. The picture on the right is of the manholes for the laundry septic tank. Next slide. Within the last few years, the discharger has had several permit violations. Prior to 2019, the laundry waste seepage pits overflowed frequently into the parking lot. In response, the discharger installed four more seepage pits, and as far as we know, the problem has been corrected. The discharger only reports estimated flows for the main plant and for the laundry waste instead of measuring the flows with a flow meter. Many of the main plant's treatment components need maintenance or have failed, and the plant is not treating the waste properly. And in fact, for the last 2.5 years, monthly monitoring has shown that effluent has exceeded one or more of the effluent limits every month. And you'll find these monitoring results in Attachment A to the cease and desist order. In May 2022, Water Board staff issued a notice of violation, which describes the problems I just summarized and is found as Exhibit 10 in the evidence list. This notice of violation directed the discharger to take a number of actions. The discharger responded by hiring a California registered engineer to evaluate the wastewater plant and determine the upgrades needed to comply. The engineer submitted a report in June 2022, which stated that the discharger had replaced several missing or inoperable components. A second report was submitted in August 2022. The report said that even when all the components were operating correctly, the plant still could not meet the effluent limits, and therefore additional components would be installed by October of 2022. However, that engineer is no longer involved with the site, and the additional components were not installed. Although the plant operator is trying different adjustments to enhance treatment, the wastewater continues to exceed effluent limits. To our knowledge, there has been no significant progress toward compliance since August of 2022. Due to the lack of voluntary compliance and the continuing effluent violations, the prosecution team prepared this cease and desist order. Our goals are to ensure that the upgrades are completed within a reasonable timeframe, that both the main plant and the laundry waste systems will comply with all aspects of the permit, and that the discharger has a clear understanding of what the Water Board is requiring. Next slide. If adopted, the cease and desist order would require the discharger to submit four technical reports, each of which must be prepared by a California registered engineer. The first report is due by January 1st, 2024. And it would document that the upgrades to the main plant, as proposed in the August of 2022 report, have been completed and that flow meters have been installed for both the main plant and the laundry. The second report is due by May 1st, 2024, and would contain an evaluation of 6 months of monitoring data to determine whether the main plant in the laundry will consistently treat the waste to meet the permit's effluent limits. If not, the report is to include a proposal for additional upgrades, which must be implemented by July 1st, 2024. Those upgrades are not installed, and they would need to show that they had made them. Sure. The third report would be due by August 1st of 2024 and is to include an evaluation of all the seepage pits, both for the main plant and the laundry, to determine if they will consistently dispose of the waste without overflowing. And if not, the report is to include a plan to install more seepage pits by September 15th of 2024. And the final report is due by October 1st, 2024. It would document that all additional upgrades have been completed and will certify that the discharge from both the main plant and the laundry will comply with the permit. Next. This order was originally scheduled for the August board meeting, but was delayed to this meeting. Because of that, we've had to make several revisions. The prosecution team transmitted the proposed revisions to the advisory team and the discharger last week, and you should have a copy in front of you. I'll just go through the revisions briefly. Revision one adds the name change order, which reflects the current owner of the Holiday Inn Express. Revisions 2 and 11 update attachment A to include the most recent monitoring results. Revisions 3 through 9 add 3 months to each due date for the technical reports. And then revision 10 updates the date of this board meeting. So in summary, there have been multi-year significant violations at the small wastewater treatment plant. Although the owner initially took actions to voluntarily come back into compliance, there has been no progress for over a year. This proposed cease and desist order will set timeframes and expectations, and the goal is to have all aspects of this facility, both the main plant and the laundry, in compliance with the permit by October of next year. The cease and desist order includes language allowing the executive officer to approve time extensions if delays are beyond the control of the discharger. The prosecution team recommends that the board adopt the tentative cease and desist order with the revisions we proposed last week. This ends our formal presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Do you think that the treatment plant, you said 2009, do you think if it was operating properly, it would have met the requirements back then? Or are the requirements the same now as they were back in the discharge requirements? Or are they more stringent now?
No, the effluent limits are exactly the same as they were in 2009. It's the exact same permit. My belief is that maybe the plant wasn't built correctly. It didn't have all the components it needed to meet the effluent limits.
And if the discharger submitted his water bills, chances are most of that water is probably going through his system, with the exception of some outdoor irrigation.
There's a little bit of landscaping, but the majority goes through there. Yeah.
Okay. All righty. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, David Boyers, counsel for the prosecution team. Just as a matter of process, I understand Mr. Bakta, the discharger's representative, is participating via Zoom. I want to make sure he has the rights to unmute himself and interpose objections if necessary.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Oh. Okay, now we will get comments from the discharger.
And I just want the board, just alert the board, the hearing procedure technically did say that all parties to the proceeding were to participate in person. However, the prosecution team has not objected to his remote participation.
Okay. So do we have comments from the discharger?
Yes, I do. As far as the water usage, yes, we have 3 meters. a separate meter for landscape, separate meter for fire, and a separate meter for domestic. And our domestic water usage is split into wastewater and the laundry system, which is a totally separate discharge. Based on the 29 Palms Water District meter reports and usage, the hotel approximately uses, on an average, they have a 10-year history on the billing. So we went and looked at it, and the average was about 5,000 gallons combined between the wastewater treatment and the laundry. When the hotel was built, which we didn't know till we found out recently that there were meters to the laundry system, but they were never looked at. They were up in the ceiling, so nobody looked at them. And then recently we found out that there is a meter there that basically tracks how much water is used. One's on the hot water and one's on the cold water going to the laundry system. And our recent meter readings came out to about 1,200 gallons a day. So if you minus that from 5,000, it's 3,800 gallons per day that we're using for the wastewater treatment. On the regulatory considerations, item 25 and 27, I had a question because our discharge is threatening the Dale Hydrologic Unit benefit uses. We are only basically sending 3,800 gallons per day. When I checked with 29 Palms Water District, the city of 29 Palms uses 1.2 million gallons a day, of which most of it goes through septic tanks. There are very few businesses, maybe two or three businesses that were developed recently or in the last 10 years are on their own wastewater treatment plant. But still, 99.9% of the city dispenses water through through septic tanks. And you know the discharge of septic tanks is way higher than whatever is stipulated for our discharge levels. Even though we are not meeting the real regulatory discharge limits, but we are still way lower than what a septic tank discharge would be. So I just wanted to throw this out, and I had mentioned this when we had our meeting with the prosecution team, and I don't know if they shrugged it off or they thought I was not correct, but I still wanted to bring it up to the board because you'll probably pay attention to that. I'm only doing 3,800 gallons, which is 0.005% of the total discharge of water. And how can that be threatening the water supply more than the city? I heard Vindy talk about that the city was in an order. I wish they go ahead and have the city come up with a municipality type of system where it benefits all of us, because the intent of the law is to basically have good water quality. And with me alone, it doesn't stop there. What is the board's plan to basically enforce City of 29 Palms to do what it's supposed to do for water quality? I think this whole thing is a little bit hyped up, and just because the order was signed by the previous owner when the hotel was built, and I came into the picture not realizing what it is. I thought it was just going to be like an elevator contract or, you know, repair contract on other things that we have. But then when I nosedived, I said, oh, wow, what have we gotten into? This is not something. We have spent over $250,000 in 1 year. And, you know, the parts to the machine, to the wastewater treatment were about maybe $10,000, $15,000. Rest is all in fees from either the person who's handling the plant to the engineer, to everything. It's a very costly item for small business. We can't handle this, you know, and I wish the board would look into that and say, why don't we mandate the cities to come up with a wastewater treatment plant? So that we have other, I used to manage other hotels before this one, and our sewer service charges on a municipality level was $8,000 to $10,000, and the size was pretty similar. You know, we pay $8,000 to $9,000, our sewer line is connected to the city mains, and we were done. This is, on an average, is costing us $75,000 to $80,000 a year. The cost is tremendously high, and I wish somebody would look at this from a small business angle. That, you know, that's going to basically put us out of business if this keeps going on. And the charges that they're leveling us for violation are, you know, really high. And we're trying our level best. We've spent a lot of money. We've always had engineers work on this. But, you know, the board doesn't have reputable list of people. They all come in and basically try to rob us under the name of board order, you know. So there's a lot of things that are not right and not set for small businesses properly. Maybe it's well set for municipalities where, you know, they have a tax base and everybody contributes. But for a small, very small discharger under 5,000 gallons a day, it's very difficult. And that's what I wanted to state to the board. And we will try our level best to comply. And we are. I can produce all the bills and everything else that we've spent money on, you know, checks issued out. And you'll see it's $250,000 and going on more and more. We just recent October results have come in that are meeting the challenges. They're meeting the guidelines. But, you know, how long? I don't know. There's always something that will go wrong or something that, it's very difficult to manage. Very, very difficult. Believe me. We are not in the wastewater business. We're in the hotel business. We have our own share of problems on the hotel side, but this was never anticipated. And especially coming out of pandemic, it's even more hard for us. With mortgage rates going up, everything else going up, it's very difficult. So that's all I had to say.
Thank you, sir. Any public comment on this item, Mary?
No, we have none.
Any board member comments? Okay, I will now close the hearing. The hearing on agenda item 6 is closed. May I please have a motion to adopt agenda item 6, which is the cease and desist order to 29 Hospitality Inc.
Someone.
Do I have a second?
I'll second it, but I do have a question.
Before we take the we have bring the motion to a vote. I think there should be some time for member deliberation and questions.
Do you have a question?
Well, I was just wondering about what this guy is saying and whatnot. I understand some of it, but is there?
And I think we just need to reopen the hearing. If you're going to be asking questions of the parties.
I was asking you a question about what he said.
Okay.
Is there anything in there that you see that is different than here, and would it change what's here?
No.
Okay. I would like to reopen the hearing, and I'd like to ask the discharger a question.
Okay, I will reopen the hearing.
Remind me again when you acquired this hotel.
End of 2015.
The end of 2015. So this has been ongoing as a challenge from 15 to 23. Is that what I'm understanding?
The previous owner also had issues. That's what we found out just recently.
And I know this is going back in history, but when you were considering the acquisition, did you do a due diligence? Did you read reports, records, permits, et cetera?
Yes. We did do, but it was very basic. It was just a wastewater treatment plant and it was just processing. And we thought it was greener. It was good, you know. And we didn't look into the entire order. It was beyond our scale, scope.
Hey. I have a question too. Do you have an operations and management or maintenance person that's certified for this?
Yes. Yes, we do.
And they never caught it, huh? They never understood what was going on?
Unfortunately, historically, there were a number of similar plants installed up in both Yucca Valley and 29 Palms that probably didn't have the correct operator at the time.
Ed, is this based on your personal experience?
Yes.
Okay.
Should I not say that?
I would limit that. You didn't take the oath. And so we're here to make decisions based on the record that the parties have the information that the parties presented to you.
Should I take the oath?
I don't think that okay. Kind of discussion is appropriate.
As difficult as this may be to undertake as the discharger, I think by the fact that this has gone on since 2015 to now, that it's important that this situation be remedied sooner than later. And we have had in the past, I think at the last board meeting, we had a similar situation with another hotel chain with a package treatment plant. So I would hope that other hotels take heed and look at their permits and get their house in order before the board has to take actions such as we're contemplating. I would also hope that the city of 29 Palms is able to move forward and get a wastewater, a POTW put in up there sooner than later and get people connected.
And, you know, I've heard they received the $50 million grant for their wastewater project, the city of 29 Good. Palms.
And I think you said also that High Desert was giving some too. Yeah. So it's coming.
But I really encourage, if you have other permits, that you go look at those and fully understand them. And it sounds like you're taken steps such as this in the past with other hotels that you may have operated. So going forward, as part of your due diligence, if you ever do this again, I would really encourage you to understand your environmental permit requirements.
Ma'am, this is the only hotel that I have come across with the wastewater treatment. I never had past experiences or anything like that.
Okay.
And 29 Palms has more than 10 hotels. It's only two hotels that were built recently in the last 10 years are on the wastewater treatment. Rest of them are all on septic tanks. There's a Motel 6 right across the street, 120, 130 rooms, twice our size, almost twice our size, is on septic tanks. So that's
pretty good. Ms. Wiles, would you be able to
respond to that or give us some baseline information about what other similar requirements there are for hotels in the area?
Yeah, my understanding is that it was the mid-2000s that the Water Board identified 29 Palms as an area of concern with respect to nitrate and salt in the groundwater. So before that time, any hotels, any housing developments before that time put in septic tanks. Anything after that point had to have advanced treatment. So it's not just this hotel. There's a couple of other housing developments in 29 Palms with advanced treatment systems too. It's just a matter, it's a matter of timing.
So would it help to understand?
Any other board questions? I will close the hearing. And I did have a motion and a second, correct? Roll call vote.
And just to ensure that that motion is to adopt the cease and desist order as right. revised.
Correct.
Right. Roll call vote, please.
Chair Music?
Aye.
Vice Chair Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Powell?
Aye.
Board Member Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
We're going to take a 5-minute break before agenda item 8. Move ahead. I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 8, which is an unnumbered waste discharge requirements order and the corresponding monitoring reporting program for the Westwind Enterprises LTD Rio Bend RV and Golf Resort and Storms Crossing Mobile Estates on-site wastewater treatment system. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
No, but we do have the discharger available for questions.
Okay, I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Okay. Please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. The order of speakers for this item are presentation by Julia Mestis, board staff, comments from the discharger, comments from the public, board member comments, and then we'll close the hearing. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Music. Members of the board and members of the public. My name is Julia Elena Mestas, Water Resource Control Engineer and staff for the Land Disposal Unit. I have taken the oath. Today, I will be presenting tentative waste discharge requirements for Westwind Enterprises Limited, Rio Bend RV and Golf Resort, and Storms Crossing Mobile Estates. In this presentation, I will be providing some background and the key permit requirements. I will wrap up by summarizing and providing staff's recommendation. Next slide, please. The Westwind Enterprises Limited owns and operates Rio Bend and Storms Crossing on-site wastewater treatment system. The facility is designed to provide service to 451 RV spaces, 48 mobile homes, and a recreation building with a laundry room. The treatment and disposal systems at the facility include 80 septic tanks at Rio Bend, indicated by the yellow marker, and 8 septic tanks at Storms Crossing, indicated by the green marker. The combined domestic wastewater is then discharged into 2 unlined on-site evaporation percolation ponds. This slide shows an aerial map of the facility's location in Imperial County near Sealy. The evaporation percolation ponds are located on the parcel on the bottom left of the image outlined in red. Next slide, please. The evaporation percolation ponds at Rio Bend, seen in this slide, were regulated by Board Order R7-2017-0015, and the leach field was regulated by General Order 97500 for small domestic facilities prior to the board order update in 2021. Rio Bend is currently regulated under Board Order R7-2021-0024, which regulates all wastewater disposal systems at Rio Bend as a single facility. Staff took the picture on the right during a planned announced site inspection. The discharger staff has informed the Regional Water Board that vegetation seen in the area surrounding the ponds has been cleared away. Next slide, please. Board Order R7-2021-0024 requires updating because Regional Water Board staff noted the following key issues pertaining to the facility. Wastewater from Storms Crossing a mobile home park adjacent to Rio Bend, is currently unregulated. Imperial County Department of Health Services approved an application for a septic system in 1993 for Storms Crossing. The proposed system included 8 septic tanks and a leach field. The leach field is no longer used at Storms Crossing. All wastewater from the septic system is discharged to the evaporation percolation ponds on the Rio Bend property. Groundwater monitoring has also been included in the tentative order as a special provision and will be discussed further on the next slide. The tentative order incorporates these monitoring requirements to be consistent with applicable laws and regulations and current operations. Next slide, please. The discharger will continue to be required to comply with the following effluent limits for the on-site wastewater treatment and disposal system. One, the 30-day monthly average from the on-site wastewater treatment system into the evaporation percolation ponds is not to exceed 88,000 gallons per day. Two, the discharge to the ponds has an incremental addition of 300 milligrams per liter of total dissolved solids above the water supply. Source water monitoring for TDS is required semi-annually. Three, effluent from the on-site wastewater treatment system is also required to comply with a pH limit range of 6 to 9 standard units. Four, the discharger is required to maintain aerobic conditions for the operation of the evaporation percolation ponds. The dissolved oxygen content in the upper zone of the evaporation percolation ponds is required to be greater than 1 milligram per liter. The first three constituents require monthly monitoring and reporting. Next slide, please. The tentative order includes a detailed description of the facility, the processes and operations, and effluent characterization. The tentative order requires the implementation of a groundwater investigation to determine the background water quality for parameters and constituents of concern in the vicinity of the facility and disposal area. Within 90 days of adoption of this order, the discharger is required to submit the work plan with a time schedule for approval by the Regional Water Board's executive officer. After the investigation is completed, the discharger is required to submit a summary report that contains all results from the investigation. The tentative order also includes a special provision that delegates the authority to approve requests for extensions of time for the groundwater investigation to the Regional Water Board's executive officer. Next slide, please. The tentative order was noticed for the required 30-day public comment period with comments due by October 2, 2023. No comments were received. Next slide, please. During a review, staff noticed that the monitoring and reporting program does not include monitoring for dissolved oxygen, which has an effluent limit. On page 26 of the tentative order, staff proposed to add another row to the end of the monitoring and reporting program, table 1, for evaporation percolation pond monitoring, requiring that dissolved oxygen be monitored and reported on a monthly basis. The additional monitoring parameter is required to verify compliance with the effluent limitations of the tentative order, which provides as follows. The ponds shall be maintained so they will continuously operate in aerobic conditions. The dissolved oxygen content in the upper zone, 1 foot of the evaporation percolation ponds, shall not be less than 1 milligram per liter. This change is specified in the change sheet distributed to the board prior to the meeting and posted on our website for public access. Next slide, please. Staff recommend that the board adopt the tentative order subject to changes in the change sheet. Next slide, please. And that concludes this presentation. We are available for any questions or comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any comments from the discharger?
They are available for questions.
Do we have any public comments on this item?
No, we do not.
Any board comments? All right, I will now close the hearing. May I have a motion to adopt agenda item 8 with the added change, which is waste discharge requirements order R7-2023- to be determined and the corresponding monitoring and reporting program.
I'll move.
Second.
May I have a roll call vote, please?
Chair Music?
Aye.
Vice Chair Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Powell?
Aye.
Board Member Perez? Board Member Perez? Okay, abstain. Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Now we'll move on to information items. Starting with agenda item 9, the board will now hold a workshop on the 2023 triennial review of the water quality control plan for the Colorado River Basin region. The purpose of this workshop is to solicit stakeholder and board member input and to encourage and facilitate a high level of interaction among the board members for discussing and providing direction to staff. The board welcomes public input on the item, and members of the public will have an opportunity to provide comments. As such, electronic speaker card requests were submitted prior to the meeting, and speaker cards were also collected at the meeting. To ensure a productive and efficient workshop, oral comments may be limited to 3 minutes at the discretion of the board chair. This is an informational item only. Although Colorado River Basin Water members are present, no board action will be taken on this informational item. The board will, however, have an opportunity to ask questions and provide comments. The order of speakers for this agenda item are as follows. First, there will be a presentation by Hajar Dewitty, board staff. Next, the board will hear comments from the public. Finally, the board will have an opportunity to make their own comments. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair and members of the board. My name is Hajar Dewitty. I'm an engineering geologist at the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board. Today, I'm here to provide you with, and the public with an overview of the triennial review. My goal of this presentation is to inform the public and to help inform the board of this process. This presentation is bilingual with English and Spanish text. English text is on the left side in black font, and Spanish is presented on the right side in blue font. Next slide, please. So here's an overview of the discussion that I will be giving today. In this presentation, I will start with the basin plan, what it is and what it does. Then I will explain the purpose and process of the triennial reviews. After this, I will discuss this triennial review regarding the public participation process, the triennial review list, and the timeline. Next slide, please. There are 9 regional water boards across California. The Colorado River Basin region is shown in gray on this map. Regional water boards make critical water quality decisions for their respective regions. The state responsibilities that are performed by the water boards are outlined in federal legislation, which is the Clean Water Act, and state legislation, the Port of Cologne Water Quality Control Act. The way we fulfill these responsibilities is described in our Water Quality Control Plan for the Colorado River Basin region, known as the Basin Plan. Next slide, please. The Basin Plan establishes water quality standards, which consist of beneficial uses and water quality objectives. The Basin Plan contains implementation plans that describe the actions necessary to meet the water quality standards, such as total maximum daily lows, known as TMDLs, and prohibitions. The Basin Plan also contains other types of information that describes the regional water board's own activities and priorities, references existing regulations, references other agencies' activities, and provides background descriptions of the hydrologic features of the region. Next slide. The Basin Plan designates water quality standards for water bodies within our region. Beneficial uses are contained in Chapter 2 of the Basin Plan, and water quality objectives are found in Chapter 3. Beneficial uses describe how each water body is used, for example, municipal, domestic supply, or for wildlife habitat. To protect the beneficial uses, we establish water quality objectives, which can be expressed as concentrations of pollutants that should not be exceeded, or as descriptions of water characteristics that should be met. These descriptions are interpreted using concentrations of pollutants outlined in other state or federal recommended standards. Not all water bodies in the region have beneficial uses identified, and not all pollutants have water quality objectives specified. And so new water quality standards may need to be designated in these instances. On other hand, existing water quality standards may need to be revised as conditions change or as new information becomes available. Next slide. Implementation plans contained in Chapter 4 of the Basin Plan describe actions necessary to protect and restore water quality standards for surface and ground waters of the region. I would like to bring to your attention two key types of implementation plans, TMDLs, and prohibitions. Total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, are pollution control plans that address surface water impairments. A pollutant that exceeds the water quality objective for a specific water body is an impairment. It impairs the beneficial use that the objective is based on. Once an impairment is identified, it is our responsibility to develop and implement a plan to eliminate it, if possible. Sometimes we may need to start by evaluating water quality standards that the impairment was based on. When we identify impairments, we use a specific pollutant concentration limit to determine that a pollutant's concentration is too high, but sometimes we have to consider whether that limit is appropriate for the water body with its site-specific conditions and existing beneficial uses. We may find that a more stringent limit is needed to protect its beneficial uses, or that a less stringent limit may be sufficiently protective. But if the water quality objectives and beneficial uses are appropriate, then we must develop a TMDL for that pollutant in order to describe and direct actions that must be taken to improve the water quality and get rid of the impairment. TMDLs are typically incorporated into the basin plan and later incorporated into permits, but some can be implemented directly through permits or other regulatory measures without making changes to the basin plan. New TMDLs must be developed to address impairments that have not yet been addressed or have been identified. And existing TMDLs may need to be revised as conditions change, or as new information becomes available. Prohibitions are regulations directed at limiting specific types of discharges to protect the quality of receiving waters, either in specific areas or throughout the region. Prohibitions can be used for both surface waters and groundwaters. However, they are a common tool that are used to protect groundwaters because TMDL regulations do not apply to them. Next slide. The Basin Plan also contains other types of information that describes the Regional Water Board's own activities and priorities, references existing regulations, references other agencies' activities, and provides background descriptions of the hydrologic features of the region. So Chapter 1 describes the Regional Water Board's authority and the region. Chapter 5 cites statewide policies and identifies regional issues. Chapter 6 describes the Regional Water Board's monitoring activities. There is also a lot of non-regulatory language in Chapters 2, 3, and 4 that I mentioned earlier, which contain water quality standards and implementation plans. This language needs to be updated as environmental conditions change and as new policies are developed, and also as monitoring plans are updated. Next slide, please. So what is a triennial review? To meet federal and state requirements, regional water boards review their basin plan every 3 years. We start this by identifying what changes need to be made to the basin plan to better protect water quality. We do this both internally and by engaging the public. We then develop a draft prioritized list of potential projects called the triennial review list. The draft triennial review list is made available for review during a public comment period, which includes a workshop, which we are having currently. Comments are responded to prior to the public hearing for board approval. At the public hearing, the board will consider whether to approve the triennial review. Next slide. So the most important deliverable of the triennial review is the triennial review list. Once the triennial review is adopted, it will serve as a 3-year work plan for the triennial review period. For the 2023 triennial review, this will be January of 2024 through December 2026. The projects on the list are potential changes to the basin plan called basin plan amendments, and total maximum daily loads TMDL projects. The list includes ongoing projects that we have that we already have dedicated staff resources to, pending projects from the previous trino review that have not been started, and new projects to address issues that were identified during the trino review process by staff and by the public. The projects are ranked based on the board's needs, public input, and resource availability. Once the trino review is adopted by the board, the ranking will help determine the order in which the projects are assigned and started. Being on the trino review list does not guarantee that the project will be completed or even started during the trino review period. If a new project does not rank high enough, resources may not be available during that time to start working on it. Projects that are started but not completed by the end of the 3 years are continued in subsequent trino review periods. Projects that are not started by the end of the 3 years are considered for the next trino review period. Next slide. In order to appropriately distribute limited staff resources to new projects as ongoing projects are completed, all projects were ranked so that new ones can be started based on the ranking. With some flexibility to account for staff expertise, amount of staff time available, and emerging needs, we rank the projects based on the criteria listed on this slide and described in detail in the staff report. The ongoing project criteria is based on whether the project has already been assigned or has been worked on or is new. The Salt and Sea criteria awards points to projects that will protect water quality at the Salt and Sea. We also considered whether the project addresses environmental justice or tribal issues. The completion criteria for ongoing projects reflects how likely the project is to be completed during the 2023 trino review period, with more points being awarded to projects that are more likely to be completed. For a new project, it reflects how long the project takes, with more points being awarded to projects that would take longer to complete once started. The groundwater criteria looks at whether the project addresses groundwater impairments. This criteria was included because some of the other criteria are skewed more towards surface water. The public interest criteria is meant to identify whether a project addresses issues identified by the public. For the time sensitivity criteria, we look at how soon the project needs to be completed. For impairments, we looked at whether the project addresses or identified surface water impairments. And for beneficial uses, we determined whether the project protects or designates beneficial uses. Next slide. The previous review of the basin plan took place during the 2020 triennial review. The 2020 triennial review list consisted of 29 projects. This table shown summarizes the top 11 projects from that triennial review. The full list can be found in the 2023 triennial review draft staff report that has been posted. Of the 29 projects in the 2020 triennial review, 4 have been completed and 7 are currently ongoing. The rest have not been started or assigned to staff. 2 of the basin plan amendment projects that were assigned to staff have been completed, and these include the region-wide Indicator Bacteria Basin Plan Amendment, which is item 10 on the slide, and the Yucca Valley Septic Tank Prohibition Revision, which is item 6 on the slide. 2 of the TMDL projects that were assigned to staff have also been completed. These include the Salt and Sea Watershed Imperial Valley Organochlorine Compounds and Organophosphate Pesticides TMDL, which is item 1, and the Salt and Sea Watershed Coachella Valley Stormwater Channel Organochlorine Compounds, TMDL's Alternatives, which is item 2. The ongoing projects highlighted in yellow are expected to be completed before the end of the 2023 triennial review implementation period. Note that most of these projects do focus on the Salton Sea watershed. Next slide, please. So this is the proposed triennial review list for 2023. You'll notice it is very similar to the 2020 list. During our review, we determined that most of the projects are still necessary and have ranked them based on criteria listed in the previous slide. Some projects have been combined or have been modified in some way to reflect changes that have occurred in the last 3 years. One new project was added, the tribal beneficial uses and administrative updates to base administrative updates basin plan amendment, And parts of this project were included in the 2020 Trino Review List. The projects highlighted in yellow reflect those that are currently ongoing or have been assigned to staff. Pending projects include projects that were categorized as new during the 2020 Trino Review, but have since not been started or assigned to staff. Again, most of these projects are related to dissonancy. The ability to assign staff to these pending projects is limited by staff resources. During our 2020 Trino Review implementation period, two staff members did leave the Basin Planning Unit, which adversely affected our ability to complete projects targeted for completion. Based on projected resource availability, it is expected that no more than 3 to 5 pending or new projects may be started during the 2023 Trino Review period. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the rest of the projects included in the proposed 2023 Trino Review List. This workshop provides an opportunity for the board members and interested stakeholders to provide input regarding the listed projects and the ranking of the projects. Next slide, please. During this Trino Review, we will provide multiple opportunities for the public to participate. The first comment period was from April 26 until June 9th, when we solicited input to identify potential Trino Review projects. We received one comment letter, and this input was used to develop the draft Trino Review List. On September 25th, the second comment period began. This will go through October 24th and includes this public workshop on October 10th. The purpose of the second comment period is to solicit comments on the proposed 2023 Trino Review List and identify any additional projects. Next slide, please. So this is a timeline for the 2023 Trino Review process. We start by soliciting Trino Review issues from the public solicitation process. We are now in the public workshop where the orange arrow is. After this, we will finish the second comment period and respond to comments prior to the public hearing for adoption of the 2023 Trino Review, which is tentatively scheduled for December 12th. After the 2023 Trino Review is adopted, we will transmit it to USEPA and start the 2023 Trino Review implementation period in January of 2024. Next slide, please. I would like to thank members of the public for your participation. The goal of this presentation was to provide the public with information that will be helpful in reviewing and commenting on the draft Trino Review documents. Comments on the proposed 2023 Trino Review should be submitted by 5 p.m. on October 24th. After the Trino Review is approved, there will be continued opportunities for public participation for each project as they get developed. If you are interested in being involved in that, I urge you to go to our website and click on subscribe in the upper right corner to subscribe to our mailing lists. Subscribing to the Basin Plan mailing list will ensure that you get will ensure that you get notifications about public participation opportunities for Basin Plan amendments associated with the individual projects. If you're interested in a if your interest is primarily in projects associated with the Dissonancy specifically, then you can sign up for the Dissonancy mailing list. You can also learn more about the two main programs associated with the Trino Review projects, Basin Planning and TMDLs, by clicking on the Programs button on the top of our main page. Again, thank you for your attention and interest, and I'm happy to take any comments or answer any questions that you have on this project.
Thank you. Mary, do we have any public comments?
No, we do not.
David, I have a question. Since this is the
we have no public comments, no speakers. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Since this is an informational item only and no action will be taken, what type of comments can the board make?
Any that it wishes. It could literally, the world is your oyster. You just can't do anything about it.
Any board comments?
I have a comment. I'd just like to bring out the number 5 of this basin planning resources, which is in here most of the time, because there's always more projects we want to do or need to do than we have the PYs or the staff to do. And this says this what this year is working on all pending and new projects during 2023 Trino Review. An additional 14.85 PIs would be needed over the course of the review period, which would require 4 to 5 new staff positions to be funded, filled, and fully available for water quality standards projects. And so I just wanted to make sure that that got out there, that all of this stuff, we do what we can with the resources are that we have.
Very good point.
Yes, do you have a comment?
Yes, I have a comment besides saying good point. Would you remind me about the ranking criteria and how that was decided on, and in particular, groundwater issue, why it's like in the lower half of the criteria?
Yes, so we used the ranking criteria that was used in the previous 2020 triennial review. And so that was just the ranking criteria that we used, but we will be considering potentially changing that and altering that based on, like you said, groundwater issues, beneficial uses, and impairments, I know, going forward in future triennial reviews. But yes, we just used the same one that was used previously during the 2020 period. Yes, okay. That was.
So in your timeline, is this item going to come as a workshop item that the board can make comments or try to change things, or do we just wait to approve the final?
This is the workshop. The board can give directions and say, hey, I see this staff report and I see how you prioritize this. We think that ultimately the triennial review staff report is essentially a work plan that you will be voting on and basically saying go forth and undertake these basin planning actions over the next triennial 3 years. So you are free to direct certain changes to it. Staff have tried to come up with a consistent and coherent way of prioritizing how we spend our finite resources, and you can say, hey, I think you should give more weight to this or that. This is really about getting your feedback and participation from the community. But, if you think something should be prioritized more highly over the next 3 years, now is the time to provide that direction.
Well, the only thing I think of is I saw that the Yucca Valley septic is completed. And based upon one of our previous agenda items and the fact that the city of 29 Palms received $50 million for wastewater, I wonder if we should have something on there up in the high desert regarding septic discharges.
So in other words, you think that like at some point we should maybe consider as a basin planning something similar for the 29 Palms area?
Yes.
Okay. I think that's a good idea. We do, maybe that is something to be considered maybe for this one or the next one, the next 3 year period, because I think that would depend on the existence of a wastewater treatment plant, right?
Got a question on that.
The only thing, I believe the grants that they receive, they have to use it by the end of 2025. They only have like 2 years.
Getting the grants, it is what you were asking for them to do. Is that necessary to get a grant?
No, they have a grant.
They've already got
$50 million.
Okay. They've already got it. They've already been applied.
Put this on our triennial review about what they're going to be doing regarding wastewater and septic discharges.
But what we did for Yucca Valley, that didn't have anything to do with getting the grant money.
No.
Okay.
I don't think that goes on a triennial review. That's a whole different, as I understand, subject. But really? The triennial review is based on, it's looking at what the water quality criteria are and need to be.
Yeah, it's primarily, I mean,
page six.
Insofar.
Item six says Yucca Valley septic system.
So the triennial review is a creature of the Clean Water Act, where we have to review our, water quality standards every 3 years and say, what do we need to do and those things like that. Now, we integrate other basin planning actions as part of that process as well. And so it's not the fine, I mean, we're not necessarily, we could theoretically, I guess, add in a basin planning action, but I mean, we are, you are providing the direction for the basin planning unit for the next 3 years, more or less. Go ahead, Emma.
Hi, Emma McCorkle. So the Yucca Valley prohibition or septic tank prohibition you're referring to, it is for a revision to the one that we already had. So if you want us to put together one for, or look into looking into one for 29 Palms, we'd be happy to do that. I believe the one for High Desert Water District was requested. So I don't know if that's an avenue we should go down.
Okay, I concur with you, and I don't think we need to add 29.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But I would like to suggest that we consider reordering our ranking criteria. I believe that groundwater issue, quote unquote, should be moved up to maybe immediately below the salt and sea, and impairments, and I'm assuming that that applies to groundwater as well as surface water, should go beneath groundwater, and then we could move EJ and tribal time to complete and public interest down below that.
I think one way we could address that, I believe the criteria below salt and sea issues, they're all the same weighted. So we could change the weighting and have it move up the list if that is what you're thinking.
Yeah, I just think our purpose is protection of, you know, groundwater and preventing impairments.
Yes.
And I think that that should move way up in terms of our priority, personally.
Yes, thank you.
I'm always for moving groundwater up, but I do as a priority. Oh, yes, there you go. But okay, I just like to know on the let's see, the first four of the ongoing projects, and also I guess the salt and sea, all of those salt and sea issues there that we have up on top, are those the ones that are going to be needed for what's happening out at the salt and sea? Are these things that are going to be needed? You know,
they're adjusting impairments that we have either in tributaries to the Salton Sea or the Salton Sea itself. So we are trying to address the issues that we have at the Salton Sea, how it's going to play with, say, the new species conservation habitats and whatnot. We're not really sure yet, since a lot of that stuff is still in flux and in development. But okay, we are doing what we can to address the impairments that have been identified.
Okay, and then they'll let you know, or you guys will find out somehow if you need to move something up or do something different to help them out, right? Okay.
Yes, this is what we tentatively think the next 3 years will look like. But if you'll notice, some of the lower priority things have been achieved from the last period. So it just depends on how what our priorities are and, you know, what our resources are at the time.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
I think when we look at the final triennial review plan, it would be interesting to see the actual numerical scores for each of these projects, because I know we actually see how the total that we can add to. So I'd be kind of curious to know what the distribution of all of our projects are. Are they all concentrating toward like high scoring projects, or is there like, you know, a bunch that are hitting, you know, tens out of tens or whatever, or do we have like a good distribution throughout?
Appendix C of the staff report is all of the rankings and how we decided what they would be.
Perfect. Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. One other question, getting back to Yucca Valley. I think phase one is complete, but there's still phase two and three.
One, we are still trying to get a hold of homeowners to connect to the sewer.
That right, is it's virtually 95.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, phase it's two, mostly, and, yeah. But,
so is this saying complete? Is that just means phase one, correct?
Yeah, for the revision is complete. So on enforcement work and trying to get phase two off the ground will be ongoing.
Okay.
It's just not there.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to add a little bit. When we say complete, we mean that the basin plan has been updated to reflect what we are planning to do. We have not completed the implementation of that particular amendment yet. We're working on that. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Board Chair Music and fellow board members. My name is Angela Garcia. I'm a senior engineering geologist in the salt and nutrient management plan section with site cleanup and DOD. Just to give you a little bit of background on the informational item that is coming before you. The salt and nutrient management plans are mandated by the State of California Recycled Water Policy, which was adopted in 2009 and amended in 2018. The policy encourages the use of recycled water from municipal wastewaters sources as it becomes an increasingly important source of water for California and here in Coachella Valley. However, recycled water contains salts and nutrients that must be managed on a basin-wide scale to protect the quality of the state's groundwater. Therefore, salt nutrient management plans are required to evaluate current and future recycled water projects and to ensure that groundwater basins are adequately managed to maintain water quality. We have invited Coachella Valley Water District to provide us with an update as to what they're doing right now with their salt and nutrient management plan.
Good afternoon, everyone. As Angela said, I'm Andy Malone. I'm a geologist with West Yost Associates. We are part of a consultant team that is implementing the development of this salt and nutrient management plan for the Coachella Valley groundwater basin. The people that are hiring us are the so-called SNMP agencies, and those are all the water and wastewater agencies in the Coachella Valley, and they're funding this effort. The team that I lead is part technical, part law and policy. We've hired a law and policy expert to be part of our team, and then very importantly, a stakeholder engagement and outreach specialist too. So we have a diverse team of consultants that we've come together to implement this project. Zoe Rodriguez Del Rey from the Coachella Valley Water District is here today too. In case you have any questions of the SNMP agencies, there were a couple of other representatives from some of the other agencies, but they had to leave. We still might have a few others that are here today though. So with that, I'll dive into it. Angela, next slide, please. Angela gave you a brief overview. It's This whole salt nutrient management plan concept is rooted in the state's recycled water policy that requires for all large important groundwater basins in California to develop and implement a salt nutrient management plan so we can manage salt nutrients in these groundwater basins and protect the beneficial uses of the groundwater basins. Hard to see, but the Coachella Valley groundwater basin is outlined in kind of that white shading color on this map. Obviously, it is a large and important groundwater basin in the state of California. Almost all water uses in the area rely at least in part on groundwater, including imported Colorado River water and recycled water that supplement the groundwater basin either through direct use or through artificial recharge. so that the groundwater basin can sustainably be managed from a water supply aspect going forward in the future. I'm referring to the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act and the planning activities that all these agencies are implementing now to sustainably manage the groundwater basin from a water supply aspect. This relates to a water quality aspect of sustainable groundwater management. So the two efforts really dovetail with each other. Next slide, please. And then you can, I think there's some, keep going. All right, one more. Some of our main goals, I'm gonna start from the bottom and work up, because the main goal of the regional board is to protect groundwater quality for future generations so that these beneficial uses of groundwater remain protected perpetually. The agencies that produce and supply water throughout the region, they have other goals too. The affordable use of water in the Coachella Valley for all its beneficial users and uses. And then recognizing too that every groundwater basin is different. It's different in its hydrogeology, its hydrology, the types of water that are available to it. Hence, I'm referring to Colorado River water in this instance. And then just the socioeconomic makeup of the communities. As you know, the Coachella Valley is populated by a number of severely disadvantaged communities too. So this salt nutrient management plan needs to be developed to recognize the site-specific conditions in the community as well. Next slide, please. We view this as a very important plan that we're putting together, because the economy of the whole Coachella Valley is tied to water, obviously. This plan could impact the way recycled water and Colorado River water are used within the basin. It can also impact the way that the wastewater agencies have to manage and treat their wastewater before disposal or reuse. And obviously all of this could have cost consequences that ultimately go back to the ratepayers. So we view this plan as being very important. We have a methodical plan that we're going through in order to develop the salt nutrient management plan. Next slide, please. And then you can page through this here. We also are in need of complying with state law and policy. And I'm going to highlight three main guidance documents here that we need to adhere to as we're putting together this plan. The California Water Code, whenever you enact a new water quality standard, and in the Coachella Valley, the basin plan does not have TDS, numeric TDS objectives for groundwater. And that is a very likely outcome of this salt nutrient management plan, is going to be establishing the appropriate TDS water quality objectives for the groundwater basin. And it's probably not going to be one TDS objective for the entire groundwater basin. We're probably going to separate the groundwater basin up into what we're calling management zones, and then establishing the appropriate TDS objectives in each one of these management zones to protect the beneficial uses of those management zones. So whenever we do something like that, like establish a new water quality objective, there's a portion of the Water Code 13241, which requires us to consider a number of different factors. First and foremost, obviously, is the beneficial uses and the water quality necessary to protect the beneficial uses. But also what needs to be considered is the quality of the waters that are available to the hydrographic unit that we're talking about, the water quality conditions that could reasonably be achieved by controlling all factors that affect water quality. You'll hear me talk about our water quality modeling tools that we're going to be developing to answer questions like that, economic considerations, and then the need for developing housing and the use of recycled water. in the area. So all these things need to be considered as we're establishing water quality standards. Next slide. I guess one more. The recycled water policy. It has a number of requirements to develop a monitoring plan. This monitoring plan has already been developed and approved by this board here, and we are in the process of implementing the monitoring plan. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. To articulate your recycling use goals and objectives, to identify all the different sources of salt and nutrient loading, the assimilative capacity of the groundwater basin to accept additional loading of salts and nutrients, and then the fate and transport of salt and nutrients after they're loaded, what is their ultimate transport and fate through the groundwater basin. If implementation measures like projects or programs are recommended out of this plan, they need to be included in the salt nutrient management plan. And then an anti-degradation analysis needs to be performed on the plan consistent with Resolution 6816. And that's my next bullet here on the anti-degradation policy. One more, please. An anti-degradation analysis needs to demonstrate that this plan is going to be to the maximum benefit of the people of the state. It's going to reasonably protect beneficial uses of the groundwater basin, that any changes in groundwater quality as a result of this plan will not result in water quality that are less than the water quality standards. And then that best practical treatment and control of waste discharges are being implemented as part of the plan. So that demonstration will be made towards the end of our project here. Next slide, please. Overview of some of the main players. The agencies, the water and wastewater agencies that are funding this effort, we've titled them the steering committee in this effort. We've also formed a technical advisory committee. It includes experts, technical experts in hydrogeology, groundwater modeling, salt nutrient management. We wanted some of these technical experts to be technical experts within the Coachella Valley itself. But we also went outside of the Coachella Valley and brought in a technical expert from the Central Valley who is obviously struggling with the same salt nutrient management issues that most groundwater basins are. So we have a nice technical advisory committee that's going to be providing us peer review, comment, advice all along the way. The consultant team I already described to you at the beginning. Importantly, the Regional Water Quality Control Board and your staff. And so I'm going to talk in a little more detail about that later, but that, in our experience, has been critical to any successful development of salt nutrient management plan in our past experience. Native American tribes of the Coachella Valley, and then public stakeholders. So those are the main players. Very importantly, this board has directed us to engage in a robust stakeholder outreach and engagement process in the development of this plan. If you can go to the next slide. There are a number of stakeholders out there that are either salt and nutrient contributors or could be potentially impacted by this plan. And so they include the groundwater sustainability agencies, all the local public water supply and water wastewater agencies, the Native American tribes, environmental NGOs, multiple other stakeholders. Golf and ag are big, obviously, in the valley, and we are making a special effort to outreach to them and get them involved in this. In this plan, and then other dischargers to the groundwater basin. Each of these might have separate issues, needs, wants, goals, and objectives out of this program. If you can go to the next slide, a little cartoon to indicate that some of these issues, needs and wants and goals and objectives might be common to more than one of the groups, but that they might also have separate issues, needs and wants that are going to need to be addressed. So hence a robust public outreach and engagement program is necessary. We have, to that end, developed an outreach and engagement plan. We call it version one because this is going to be a living document that will evolve over time. This plan describes the key parties, their composition, and their roles and responsibilities as we develop this salt and nutrient management plan. It describes all the different forums by which public engagement can occur, and our communication tools, specifically our website, the timeline of how our effort is going to progress, and I'll show you that here in a minute, and then contact lists of contact information for all of the main players. So that obviously will be updated over time as it changes. Next slide. To date, we held a kickoff meeting community workshop on March 22nd. It was held in, it was a hybrid meeting, in person, in English and Spanish. All the meeting materials and the recordings are on our website, which there's a link right there. We've had multiple meetings, as I said earlier, with agriculture and golf. And as we've entered into our first technical stage here, we've had meetings with the technical advisory committee as well. So we've kicked off that whole technical process as well. And we've begun meeting with the tribal government representatives too, specifically through the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act tribal work group for the Coachella Valley. Back to the collaboration with the regional board and how key it is. The last thing we want to do is come to the end of this project and have the regional board be surprised in some way. So our intent is to keep particularly regional board staff very engaged and involved and informed all the way through. The hope is that we receive input, guidance, maybe diversions if necessary. If we're going down the wrong path, we want to know it. And we want to know it early so that we can efficiently work our way through this. And once we get to the end, that there's no surprises, and hopefully we have a successful outcome and an adoption of this plan by the regional board. To that end, we have already developed the work plan, which this board approved. That work plan was developed, again, through this collaborative process that really spells out all the different tasks and what needs to be accomplished to develop this salt and nutrient management plan. The work plan also included a monitoring program. And again, this work plan was approved by the regional board. So that was a really important first step. We are now in the process of implementing that work plan. We have been engaging with the regional board on this outreach and engagement plan that I was talking about earlier. And the regional board staff had a lot of opportunity to comment and suggest revisions to that plan before we finalized our version one. We have set up quarterly check-in meetings with Paula and her staff to give updates on our progress. Regional board staff is also invited to participate on the technical advisory committee as an observer during the meeting, but with the ability to have public comment or ask questions before and after the meeting too. So we wanted to invite the region board staff to listen in on all technical discussions that are occurring on the technical advisory committee, but not be a specific participant. However, a lot of these technical memoranda and deliverables that come out of the technical advisory committee will then be subject to review and comment by the regional board staff during the public review period. So I'll talk about that a little more in a minute. Next slide. We have six primary technical tasks, and each one of these tasks will have a memorandum, a technical memorandum that will be developed. And that will be published for comment and review by the regional board, by the public. And sometimes it goes through a preliminary review through the technical advisory committee. And we will have workshops and meetings associated with most of these technical memorandum. We also are always open to questions and feedback accepted by email or phone call or a website website contact. So we're always open for just ad hoc input along the way too. And again, we will be publishing these draft and then final TMs. The final TMs will have an appendix with the comments that we received and our responses to those comments and how it may have affected any revisions to the technical memoranda. And at the end of this process, all of these technical memoranda get compiled into one salt nutrient management plan, again, hopefully for the adoption of the regional board and any basin plan amendment that might come out of it. Our website address is right there. It's a new website, and that's where we're going to be posting all of our interim and final deliverables. We do have an email list, and we will have periodic community workshops where we'll be open to all stakeholders. Our next one we're planning for early 2024. And we will continue our regular communications with the tribes and the industry groups, golf and ag, and the regional board staff. The technical scope of work, it is spelled out in excruciating detail in the work plan, but I'm going to try to give you a brief overview here of what we'll be doing. Our initial tasks are to characterize where and how much salt nutrient loading is occurring across the basin, across the groundwater basin. And then our second task is going to be characterizing what water quality looks like with regard to TDS concentrations and nitrate concentrations across the groundwater basin and in a depth-specific fashion too. We'll be looking at it in three dimensions. This is basic information collection, data analysis that is going to facilitate everything we do subsequently. The first subsequent task is going to be defining these management zones across the basin where we're going to articulate what the beneficial uses are and what the water current water quality is, and are those beneficial uses currently protected? And what sort of beneficial use thresholds are appropriate for each one of these management zones. So a lot of that information on loading and current water quality will be useful in that second exercise in defining management zones and their beneficial uses and beneficial use thresholds. The third box there, this is where it gets very technical. And what we'll be doing is we will be constructing computer simulation models of the groundwater basin to simulate the salt nutrient loading and how that affects TDS and nitrogen concentrations throughout the groundwater basin over time. So it'll be a transient model that will have the ability to project out into the future where we think water quality concentrations are going in the groundwater basin under, first of all, the current plans for water supply and wastewater treatment and disposal, those current plans of the parties in the basin. So we'll attempt to make those future projections of water quality and then assess the model results and say, is this protective of beneficial uses or is it not? And where in the basin is it or is it not protective of beneficial uses? And with that analysis, that provides us the information to develop new model scenarios where we might include projects or programs to manage salt and nutrient loading to protect those beneficial uses. We'll run the models and see what the water quality results are and how successful and effective that those projects and programs were at controlling salt and nutrient and salt and nutrient loading and the water quality of the groundwater basin. As you can see, this might be a repetitive exercise to try to develop a salt and nutrient management plan that makes sense for the community, is cost effective, and protects beneficial uses. But this is the way we've done it in other groundwater basins, and we've been successful at doing it. We hold great hopes for it being successful here in the Coachella Valley. So with all that modeling information and the cost analysis associated with these projects and programs that may be necessary to control salt nutrient loading, that's the information that we'll compile into the salt nutrient management plan for your review and hopefully adoption. It's a detailed process. I don't expect you to read each one of these bar charts, but this is our schedule. It's a multi-year process. Right now, we're projecting to be finished by 2027. These are all the specific tasks that we'll be implementing, and the yellow stars are the major milestones where we'll have public workshops and public input on the deliverables and our progress. Next slide, please. Again, our current task right now is this whole characterization of TDS and nitrate loading to the groundwater basin, and I think I already explained to you how we're going to be using that information to develop management zones and then to assist us in our future modeling tasks. And I think the last slide here is just a map. It's kind of difficult to see here, but it's a map of where all the salt nutrient loading sources are. The red polygons are where wastewater is being percolated. The purple outlines are where recycled water or non-potable water is being used for outdoor irrigation. The little brown polygons are where septic systems exist. The tan polygons are where the groundwater replenishment facilities exist, where Colorado River water is recharged to the groundwater basin. The blue shaded areas are where urban land uses exist and where we have outdoor irrigation, and a portion of that outdoor irrigation returns to the aquifer system. The yellow is where golf courses exist and where golf course irrigation water, a portion of it that's not used by their turf, migrates past the root zone and returns to the aquifer system. And then the green areas are where agriculture exists, and agricultural irrigation waters go through that same process. That process is very important to us. When you apply water to the land surface, the plants use up a portion of the water. They don't really use up all of the salt and the nutrients that are within the water. And so what returns to the aquifer system is typically a more highly concentrated form of water. And so that's how salts and nutrients can build up in a groundwater basin over time. And so our computer simulation models are going to be equipped to simulate that process. So we're in this stage right now characterizing the salt and nutrient loading. We're going into our next phase of characterizing groundwater quality across the basin, and we're in the process of beginning to describe our methods for computer simulation modeling that the technical advisory committee will be weighing in on. I know that was a lot, and I tried to go through it quickly for you. I'm happy to take any questions at this point in time, and I'm happy to come back in the future to give you updates as well.
So what's your headcount? Why does it take so long? 3 years?
Well,
how many people are going to be working on this at one time? It seems like 3 years seems like just a really long time.
Yeah. So I would say this, that right now in collecting the data and information on groundwater quality and on salt nutrient loading and characterizing that, writing it all up and going through all these review processes through a technical advisory committee, through the public process, all of that takes some time. So those are just the first two tasks of, you know, collecting the data, updating our databases, and writing these reports. Developing new computer simulation models in such a way that we feel confident that they can be used to project out in the future, that's no small effort either. And that effort will go through technical advisory committee review, writing up technical memos to describe. So that's time intensive as well. And then the modeling process itself, we don't exactly know how long that will take, because it's unknown how many iterations of future model scenarios we're going to need to run in order to develop this plan. So yes, it does sound like a long time, but time goes by fast, especially in this type of technical work.
And are you going to take a look at state water versus Colorado River water?
That could be a management strategy, right? It's importing state water project water and putting it into the groundwater basin in lieu of Colorado River water. Probably a very expensive project. And so that may be an alternative that we could look at as a salt and nutrient management strategy for the basin. But again, you got to consider the cost involved in something like that as well.
And you mentioned other basins, any nearby basins where you perform this?
Yeah, we come, our expertise and experience was all developed in the Santa Ana River watershed.
Okay.
And particularly in the Chino Basin, where we've been developing and implementing some very sophisticated groundwater flow models that also are simulating salt and nutrients.
Did you ever do anything for Mojave Water Agency?
No.
So if you've been doing this in the Santa Ana region, why are the models there not able to be utilized with potentially some tweaks here? Why do you have to recreate models?
Like I said earlier, each groundwater basin is so unique. And so a groundwater model, maybe the code itself can be used in a different groundwater basin, but the model itself needs to be constructed and calibrated to that specific groundwater basin. It cannot just easily be transferred over to another groundwater basin.
So this isn't like air models that, you know, you have to use to get an air permit everywhere.
Yeah, it's the groundwater basin itself is a geologic feature. It's mm-hmm. got a defined bottom that's different in every groundwater basin, and then the composition of the basin, its sediment composition that's composed of is different in every basin, and then its history of how it was used is different. Groundwater models are unique to each individual groundwater basin.
So then how, not that you would create a model that misrepresented information, but how is that ground truth, so to speak? How is it determined to be reliable?
Yeah, okay, very good question. There is a process called model calibration where you have collected monitoring data historically, and then you use your model to simulate history and see how well it simulated history. In groundwater flow modeling, we use groundwater level elevation time series at wells as calibration targets. For groundwater quality, it's much more difficult. What we would use is groundwater quality data from various wells historically and then simulate the history and try to see if the model is capable of simulating history. We have a task in here to try to do that. But it won't be a formal calibration process. It'll be more of a model verification process that this model is going to be a first generation model, water quality model for this basin. But it will be an effort to give us some confidence that this model can be used in projection mode with some confidence that is producing reasonable results.
And with the likely approval of the direct potable recharge regs in December or maybe the first of the year, how is that lack of wastewater going in that's been treated into the ground going to be accounted for?
When we develop model scenarios, any sort of wastewater recharge that occurs, we'll have to define that. That will be an input to the model, a defined input to the model.
So you're going to make an assumption that in, you know, 8 years, CVWD may be, instead of sending wastewater to the ground, they're going to be reinjecting it, and that wastewater that would normally percolate down is no longer going to be available.
That could be a model input to a scenario. Yes.
Okay. Pretty
those
soon.
Those are all model inputs.
From what I'm reading, pretty soon you'll be using artificial intelligence for that very issue in water quality. And it's supposed to be like almost 100% real, but viable, but I'm not sure how that works. But anyway, and I'd like to also ask if we have updates, a lot of updates to the board here, to, so we can keep up on what's going on and so we understand. It might help us understand the process and some of your, you know, what you're coming up with at times, just to keep us abreast so that by the end of this, we're not just given a document that we don't know nothing about. So.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would like to do that.
And are these memorandums going to come out like chapters? Basically,
yes.
So chapter one will be done and we can review that, and
yes.
Then chapter two.
Exactly.
And okay. I didn't understand the difference in your technical. I wrote consultants and then consultants. So can you explain, you had technical advisors that seem to be hired consultants, and then you have consultants.
Yeah, okay. I can see the confusion there. So we, West Yost, and then our subs, which are the policy advisor and the outreach advisor. So we have been specifically hired to implement the work plan that's been approved by this board to develop the salt and nutrient management plan. So we are the technical leads that will be doing the work. But we have also hired other technical consultants to participate on this technical advisory committee as peer reviewers of us and our work. So there's a check there, mm-hmm. On us, and they're not there just to check us, but to advise us and to give us ideas on maybe better ways to do a certain task, and then just review all of our work. So yeah, there's a peer review process is built into this.
Thank you.
I think your process is wonderful. I'm glad to hear all of these technical people helping out. I know the last salt nutrient management plan didn't have that. It wasn't a great plan or anything. I know this one sounds like it's just you've got a really good handle on how to do it. And I think I'm very pleased at the process that you guys have come up with. So thank you.
Is Mission Springs part of this?
Yes.
Good.
Yes, it is. So
Desert Hot Springs.
And Mission Creek.
The Mission Creek subbasin, the Desert Hot Springs subbasin, and the Indio subbasin.
And how about the city of Coachella?
Yes, that's part of the Indio subbasin. Yeah.
And so is the Garnett area, part of the
yes.
Indio? Yes.
Yeah.
How about the Salton Sea? Do you go out that far?
No. That is going to be a boundary condition for us, is that boundary with the Salton Sea. So that's going to be a task that we're going to have, is how to simulate the groundwater flow or the inflow from the aquifers that exist beneath the Salton Sea.
Thank you.
Eric.
Item 11, we'll now have a report from our executive officer, Paula Rasmussen.
Good afternoon, Chair Music, members of the board, members of the public. I'm Paula Rasmussen, the executive officer. Today, I'm going to give you some updates regarding program activities. And I'd first like to start by introducing some new staff. We have a new water resource control engineer, Adrian Lopez. Are you here, Adrian? Stand up. And he's working in the non-Chapter 15 programs, including the local agency management program, on-site wastewater treatment programs, and waste discharge requirement permitting. Now, Adrian comes to the regional board from the city of Riverside. He worked there for almost 2 years in environmental compliance. And prior to that, he worked in consulting for over 7 years, managing stormwater and air quality programs, doing environmental reports and plan checks. He is a civil and environmental engineer with a Bachelor of Arts, Bachelor of Science degree that includes public policy from Carnegie Mellon University. Now, the Water Quality Standards and On-Point Source Unit has a new environmental scientist, Ryan Culhane.
Welcome.
He's working in the TMDL and Irrigated Lands Agricultural Programs. Now, Ryan joins us from the Naval Information Warfare Center's Environmental Science Department and the USDA Salinity Laboratory. He's a Navy veteran, and he served in the U.S. Navy during Operation Iraqi Freedom. He's an environmental scientist with a Bachelor of Science degree in Environmental Science from University of California at Riverside. And he's also finishing his Master of Science degree in Environmental Health from San Diego State University. We're very happy to have Ryan and Adrian join us at the Water Board. Moving on, the governor recently signed two bills modifying the remote meetings provisions of the Bagley-Keene Act, specifically Government Code Section 11133. The first bill, Senate Bill 143, is effective from now until the end of the year. The second bill, Senate Bill 544, will then take effect on January 1st and sunset at the end of December 2025. The first bill essentially reverts to the COVID-era remote participation system that was in place until June of this year. The second bill, which goes into effect at the beginning of next year, is slightly less permissive. Under the second bill, a quorum of board members needs to be physically present at the notice location of a board meeting. Further details will be provided as there are additional limitations for remote participation by board members. And next, I'd like to share some slides with you. Dan, if you could display the slides. What I'd like to talk to you about today is the Yucca Valley septic prohibition and the progress of converting from septic tanks to connections with the collection system for the High Desert Water District. Next slide. To provide you with some background about the prohibition, a 2003 USGS study reported that the groundwater basin between Yucca Valley was impacted by high nitrate concentrations. The source of the nitrates was due to septic tank effluent from the households, industries, and commercial and industrial sites. According to this study, from early 1995 through 2001, nitrate concentrations in the groundwater increased from background concentrations of 10 milligrams per liter to more than the U.S. EPA water quality maximum contaminant level of 45 milligrams per liter. In response to the increases in the nitrogen concentrations, in 2011, the regional board adopted a resolution which identified the town of Yucca Valley as a top priority for eliminating the use of septic systems. Subsequently, in 2012, a basin plan amendment was adopted which prohibited use of septic systems in Yucca Valley. Next slide. Is that the next slide? Okay. I think I want the next slide. There we go. The basin plan amendment has a two-phase septic tank prohibition for discharges from new and existing septic systems within the town of Yucca Valley. Phase one prohibits discharges by December 31st, 2023. I think you need to click it through, Dan. And phase two has two deadlines, depending on the status of the listing of the Joshua tree as an endangered species. Next slide. High Desert Water District addressed the prohibition by developing a wastewater collection system, wastewater reclamation project, and constructed a wastewater reclamation facility. Next slide. This is an aerial view of the water district's reclamation facility. Construction activities began in 2018, and domestic effluent began receiving at the district in 2019. Discharge of clean water into percolation ponds began in 2020 in February. Next slide. Now, as part of the project, a sewage collection system was installed and existing septic systems were required to connect to the collection system. High Desert Water District identified all of the sewer connections for the parcels included in phase one of the prohibition as shown on the table. These connections are listed by the different categories, including the commercial, manufactured homes, and the other types of systems there. There were originally 4,403 developed parcels with active wastewater flows. Next slide. Of the approximately 4,400 developed parcels, the district was able to connect most of them. However, in 2023, there were still over 300 properties that were not connected to the sewer. As noted earlier, the deadline for completion of phase one is the end of December of this year. Now, during the spring and summer of this year, staff initiated actions that increased the numbers of properties that connected. In late September, there were 249 properties remaining to be connected. Next slide. This graph illustrates the connections per day since April, which have increased from about 0.3 connections per day to 1.1 connections per day over the last 80 days. Now, this increase in connections per day may be due to regional board efforts and collaboration with the High Desert Water District. Regional board staff mailed out 260 notices of violation to unconnected properties in April of this year. Some of these letters were returned as undeliverable, and alternative addresses were provided by the water district, and notices of violation were reissued to these properties. Now, since April, staff has made over 100 phone calls and has been in contact with residential property owners, commercial and government locations such as Caltrans and the post office regarding these unconnected properties. Staff also issued 31 follow-up letters to property owners that were not responsive to the notices of violation. Next slide. Staff recently visited 31 properties to determine the reason for the return letters. They learned that most homes that were visited have a mailbox and are inhabited. Staff believes the letters were returned because they were sent via certified mail and required a signature, and they will be following up on these locations. I would like to acknowledge the staff that have been addressing the Yucca Valley septic prohibition. They are Emma McCorkle, Raveline Cower, and Michael Perez. And this concludes my update. Any questions?
Thank you.
item 12. Do any board members have anything they'd like to discuss? We haven't gotten to that agenda item yet. Nothing? Item 12, there was no chair's call this month, and I would just like to thank Paul and her staff for, once again, excellent presentations. And I suggest that we, next time, maybe have an item 14 that says legal update. Item 14 will be selection of board dates. Has everyone reviewed the dates for 2024?
Are there any particular matters that you would like updating? Okay.
Your choice. And you can have no legal update. If
legal show and tell.
Yes. I don't want to feel like you're left out.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So dates look good? Dates look good.
It looks good to staff. We proposed them. So you want to hear what your thoughts are? Yeah. Starting meetings at 9.
I think someone would prefer 10. 9 o'clock, yes. All right. And with that, thank you all for participating, and we'll adjourn the meeting. 104.
And there is no closed session today.